Broadcasting to the world. To the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul from BlakeRadio.com.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. Now, I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports and Justice Show. As always, we open with a prayer. With the background music of none other than the legendary, the late, great John Coltrane, dear Lord, is the music, and dear Lord, we come to you, thanking you for another day. Ask you, Lord, that you have your will and way, dear Lord. Give the Lord nothing what we want, what we need, and we need thee every hour. We ask you, dear Lord, to continue to bless us, and we thank you for blessings forthcoming. Blessings that have come, and all blessings unmerited and so many unseen. Bless our families, bless our friends. Thank you for your darling son, Jesus, Lord, that died on the cross that we may have the right to the tree of life. And dear Lord, although you may not be anybody as God, you are God all by yourself. And as that man once said, although we may not live on Park Avenue, by the grace of God, we thank you that we don't live on a Park Avenue bench. Dear Lord, your will, your way. For you're God all by yourself, and you may not be everybody's God. Thank you, Lord, for health, strength, all the little things we just so automatically take for granted. Bless our families, bless our friend, my panel, which is my family, which I was born into, my family here in Brazil, always our number one listener, Rosie. We love and thank you for all things, Mother God. Bless my niece as she's going through something. No sorrow that earth has that heaven can heal. We ask these blessings, dear Lord, in the name of your darling son, Jesus, the bright and morning star, the rose of Sharon, Jesus the Christ, the Son of Man, the Son of God. In Jesus' name, dear Lord, amen. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Lake, man, Network Rainbow, Soul of Channel Sports Network, the show. And Sea Wings live on location from Pittsburgh. And the Jets came up short. And the Giants came up at the right time when they looked like they were going to... get blown out. But what came about was a record-setting day for Eli Manning, 510 yards. I thought he had passed the record, but I think he came up 3 yards short on passing Phil Simms. And that moved to Scooter, Mr. Cruz, and Knicks with almost a 200-yard day in receiving. And the Giants came back to beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at MetLife Stadium, and down in Pittsburgh, the Hoops will be happy. JETS Jets are now all among the losers. But it's a pretty crowded bracket. The Bills won today, and the Patriots stumbled. So it's 1-1 across the board. And last night, big fight. We're waiting for Mel Cosell Smith Jr. to come in to bring us the intro. But until then, Hoopsa will be joining with us. Did we catch up? Sea Wings, are you with us yet from Pittsburgh? Okay, he will be getting back with us. I see Dusty with us. And I got my Hoosier 646-351-3813. Is that Howard Weston Jr.?
No, that's Skeeter Mitchell. How are you, buddy?
Oh, hey, Skeeter. Okay, Mr. Mitchell did join us. Skeeter Mitchell. You know, Dusty, were you on the show when Skeeter joined us before, Dusty?
Yes, he was.
I think we were. Yes. Oh, yeah. Skeeter. How you doing?
How's it going, Dusty?
Skeeter, okay, Jim, hold on just a second.
We were discussing old times.
Well, hey, so y'all were talking a long time. But without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Mel Cosell Jr. will welcome you all to the Sports in Depth Nation. Rooney, your show.
Doc, the Sports in Depth Nation is here. The Sports in Depth panel is here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I'm here. We're here via the Blake Radio Network, and the straw that stirs the drink is here, and that's Doc Stanley. Take it away, Doc.
Thank you, Rooney. And hold on, a young lady has something to say.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best, featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Doc Stanley, Sports in Depth on the Blake with the Network Rainbow Soul Channel Sports in Depth show. And we are getting it all together here now. It is a sports wrap-up and a lot of things to talk about. As you know, big fight last night. Two big fights. Well, one turned out to be a big fight and one turned out to be, a little massive display. Jets on the L side today after a whole lot of points. I was with my barber. He, funny Panama, said, I knew last week they should have saved some of them points for this week. And that
I always do that.
Yeah.
When a team comes up with 40 home runs, I said, save at least half for the next day. And then they get shut out 1-0.
That's always the case.
It always seems to be the situation. You win a game 17-2, and the next day you lose 2-1. You said, Dad, we used 3 or 4 of those runs from the game before. And, that's how it happened. Anyway, the Jets down at Pittsburgh, and that's the second time they've been down there. The last one at Pittsburgh when they played the championship game. And
when they gave it away.
That was a game. Well, the big question was, why would they keep running the ball up the middle when running up the middle wasn't working, and that's when I had gotten them there. Today they had a lead. They were up 10-7. Steelers came back and went into halftime with the lead, and with that, that was just about it. Gentlemen, hang on just a second, and we'll talk sports in a minute. There's one more plug.
All day, all night, all the time, BlakeRadio.com, music for your mind, body, and soul.
That's because of the notes from today's Giants and Buccaneers game. Head coach of the Buccaneers simply said, they got us today. All the players talked about when the smoke had cleared and the score was 41-34, they simply said they made one more play better than we did. And I asked a couple of players, could they take solace in the fact that it was a career day for both Manning, Hicks and Cruz, and they said, hey, one guy we talked about, number 21, I got to get my pad, get these numbers for you too, and I just reverted to him. All the players kind of referred to that great line by the late, great Jack Roosevelt Robinson, Jackie Robinson, and two of his greatest lines. One was, a life is not important except for the impact it has on another life. And then his quote that kind of paraphrased how he played the game and how you feel about the game. It says a lot, too, about myself and Melly Mays. Above all else, I hate to lose. And the game today, it just seemed like they had so much going for them. Let's look at some notes, too, from some of the players, they all just basically said, this was just, we had it, but, they talked about Manning and the Giants making the adjustments. And one player said, we played against the best second-half quarterback in football. Nobody makes adjustments better than Eli Manning. And they made the adjustments, and there was a time when the Giants scored 27. That's 27 unanswered points. Tampa Bay came back with a great play of their own. And, the rules changed. Talking to Bobby Miles is just amazing because in that play where it looked like he had caught the ball and was hit, pushed out of bounds, and would have put them on the 16 and probably go in. It was probably maybe still be playing overtime. But the new ruling is even if you push out of bounds and if you land with the ball, you caught it. And if you land without the ball, you didn't caught it. So the defense wins on that one. That was the turning point as far as the end of the game there. The next pass was an interception, and the Giants had won their game. But last night, and we'll talk boxing, as we had two big fights, Canelo Alvarez, Josito Lopez, fifth round, that was done. And so much of what, kick with you, Rooney, and so much of what you said, I believe Sea Wings is going to join us too. The Sea Wings, are you in with us yet?
Harold Weston Jr.,
the one only Harold Weston Jr. So much of what you said, Rooney, And I think you also, too, alluded to it, Skeeter and myself, was that if Martinez is, you know, between the two, there's no question who was a better boxer, who was a more seasoned professional. And long as he took his boxing skills and hit and run and box, it was going to be what it was for the first 11 rounds of that fight. Rooney, that's just the way it was. He just swept the first 11 rounds.
Oh, well, yeah, Doc. Basically, like I said, his talent, you know, him being the, you know, more overall talented, you know, of the two. I said, Doc, that if he could, Mino Martinez could stay focused, you know, cut the clowning to a minimum, come in here, use the jab, use his ring generalship, that, you know, he should win this fight, you know, going away. Yeah, no doubt.
Mm-hmm. And, Skeeter, I mean, you saw it, too. As we talked, you said you didn't know here and there, but you were leaning toward Martinez, and he did all the things he had to do to convincingly win the fight. It had to be that kind of fight. I mean, he was down in Las Vegas, which was, like I said, it's a lot closer to Mexico than it is to Argentina. It is like Little Mexico. He had his dad at ringside, the legendary Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. His godfather, Jose Suleiman, was at ringside, and I wrote in my story that he was going to have his family there, those with the same name, those with kin, and all the adopted, which have been all in Mexico. But last night, Skeeter, looking at that fight, he fought the fight that he had to fight to win the fight.
Yes, he did. But, you know, I tell you something. For a second, I thought we were going to see deja vu again. I thought that we were about to see a replay of Julio Cesar Chavez Sr. against Meldrick Taylor in that final round, you know.
Wow.
You know, wow. Because I'm so glad it wasn't a 15-round fight, really.
Skeeter, that's the first thing I thought about Harold Weston, who always said 12 to 15 is the defining rounds, the championship rounds,
the
death rounds.
And you talked
about how two guys that were friends of yours, Harold, meant intimately and a godfather figure to you, the great Emil Griffith, and Vito Interferma, who was the first guy to beat, and you still have a lot of nerve. You're sitting up there, be a little butterball, left somewhere to beat the guy, and then go back and serve your country. But you know, and you talked about how those rounds, or the championship rounds, and did you catch the fight, Howard? Did you see the fight?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So now you think if it's a 15-round of Martinez-Wiltz?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I mean, especially if you got caught in that 12th round. I mean, there was no other – you know, when you get nailed like that, your legs really leave you. And at the same time, you're going into that 12th, 13th, 14th round, I'm going to just let you know that you have no control of your body no more. But you're just going – your body's just going into an automatic stage. You're just – you're not having the existence in your system.
No control. You're basically a zombie, and you're basically just going through
the motion. You're going through the motion. And for him to come out for the 13th round, he would have got disaster. Either got really knocked, really got hurt, or got knocked out cold completely. You know, knowing that you got three more rounds to go, nine more minutes, it might not seem a lot, but when you run went 12 rounds in a 15 round fight, believe me, and you got dropped in that 12th. That 13, 14, and 15 round, it looked like death to you. And that's what happens. And he's lucky it was a 12. I told you before, a lot of these fighters are lucky that they got 12 rounds of death. Because back in the day, they would never make 15. They're not even considered. They get tied in 12. They get tied in 10. I mean, so 15 would kill them.
You know, Doc, we talked to Howard about this on the show before. And if I remember, Howard, you liking that to, you know, trying to run the 28-mile marathon when you kind of hit that wall at like the 16th or 17th mile, and you're like, oh, my God, I can't make this, man. I can't do another 10 rounds with this, man. I hit that wall. What the hell am I going to – yeah, how do you like it after running a marathon and hitting that wall and having to fight your way and gut your way to it?
Yeah, I had the blessing of being with one of the greatest 15-round fighters in the world and showed me and taught me and told me how to do it.
Well, how? What did he teach you? What did he show you?
It's a lot of psychological in it, but at the same time, you really got to be in well good condition for it. And so basically is that, you know, you just got to have your mindset that you can go 15 for one thing. Then you got to condition your body to know it can go. And then at the same time, You have to have this ambition that don't even think about being tired. Just think about that you got to beat this guy because he's stopping you from making a living and he took your girlfriend or whatever. You just got to go through a lot of a lot of thoughts when you go into those kind of rounds. Because you got, you know, if you've been in a heck of a fight for the first 9 or 10 rounds and you got 5 more to go, it's a monster. And believe me, when that 15th round is over, when you go back to the dressing room, you go back to your hotel room, you are dead. You are dead.
You know, a lot of people don't realize exactly how important. A lot of people don't realize how important your corner man is.
Right.
In those rounds when it comes to that point. Because you need a lot of motivational inspiration at that point. You know?
Yeah, because when I fought Benitez and saying we fought outside in Puerto Rico, it was hot as shit, and they put me in the sun, okay? The doctor who came back there and checked me, he said, I'm surprised you were even talking to me. He said, because this is insane. He said, there was already 100 degrees, and we had light, so you were like in 150-degree goddamn well, and you fighting 15 rounds? And he told everybody, he said, put some water on. I mean, it was just like that. He said, I'm surprised you even talking. He said, this is insane.
That's a testament to the condition you were in, Al.
Like I said, if it wasn't for the thoughts that and what Emil have taught me and the things that I have, you know, brought into me, and I wanted to win the world championship because that's all that was on my mind of doing at that time when I stepped in there. And so basically it was nothing on my mind. Tiredness wasn't even in the thoughts. You know, it was just fight. You know what I'm saying?
You said things that he taught you. Was it eating habits?
Eating habits. It was like, this is so funny. The funniest thing is have honey after you have some honey, just pure honey, after you have a dinner. Have honey before the fight. Have honey, every day to open up your lungs, build your lungs up. Make sure you breathe and get the breathing technique going in your nose, that you breathe through your nose, going, come breathing in, breathing out, and stuff like that. Set your own pace, but stay at it, and don't give up on with it, and then keep trying to go farther and farther with you. And then, you know, at the same time, you know, as we lived our lives back there, you know, I'm going to use the word, I'm not going to use the word, but we didn't care. Let me just use it that way. We didn't care because at that time in life, it was nothing to care for. You was going to make it or you wasn't going to make it. If you wasn't going to make it, you know where you was going to head to later on. You was going to be
in
jail or be out.
In other words, this was just boxing was your life.
Boxing was a savior. It was a savior. It was a savior for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It was a savior. I mean, guys, the cops were back then in the 1960s and the 70s. They was only making $300, $400 a week.
Mm-hmm.
They wasn't making no money. Politicians wasn't making money. The people making money was pretty much the gangsters.
You know how I wish I'd have got that kind of information from you before you matched me with Manny Ortega Jr. back in 82, you know? You know? Hey, Harold, you were a great fighter, I'll tell you. You were a great fighter. You were a consummate pro. You really were, you know?
Mm. Now, Dusty, you know. so much of what Harold and Skeet is saying, and what Joe said too, it's about the conditioning and the mindset. You know, I mean, you went into a fight. Good. Life or death?
It's the commitment. I mean, that's the key word.
Okay. There you go.
The commitment to get in there and condition. You know, I think I said in a program before, guys would see me running 10 miles a day. The last 2 miles were like the 6 pit bulls were chasing me. Guys, you're crazy. You're crazy. You're only fighting 4 rounds. And that's why I'm running, because those 4 rounds can be 4,000 rounds. Remember, I got a gorilla on the other side of the ring is going to kill me. You know. And then when you talk about stamina and tired and you feel the little poop as the rounds go, and I said, wait a minute, if I feel a little poop, this sucker got to be tired, too. So why should I give him the advantage and poop out when I know he's going to poop? So those are I think, Harold, you said it, the motivating factors. And, yes, the diet, the eating. you cut out toasted bread and butter and all the Fritos and Cheetos, and you eat the food that will is like will generate the health inside, because you gotta take care of yourself inside as well as outside.
Right.
And that and it has to be a mindset of an overall program of conditioning you for that war that you're going to face when that bell ring. And you talk about, yes, you have your trainers and all that, the motivators and all that. But one key factor that you have to understand, that when that bell rings, all those motivators and all that are sitting on the outside of that ring. You're the one that's in there.
But,
and
you know,
you're the one that has to execute everything that you're taught and you're supposed to do.
Right.
And when you go back to the corner, you know, but it's you. It's you. You really, I used to feel, with all the respect to my trainers, of course, Sid Martin, Clancy, and Frank Rodriguez, I was by myself when that bell rang.
That's right.
I had to
That's
think.
Right.
I had to think. I had to defend. I had to be offensive. I had to think, do this and do that, alternate, improvise to get that victory. You know, and yes, they were good to me, but man, it was me. I felt I'm the man without a country by myself in that freaking jungle there. And that's basically how I looked at it.
That's the good thing about boxing. Because in boxing, you really find out who you are, because you're facing yourself, so to speak, in there. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
You know, but you know, I gotta disagree with you guys on something there, because you got to understand, the way you learn how to fight is somebody taught you. And the people
yes,
that taught you know who you are,
yeah.
All right? Mm. And the thing is that, you know, it's Sid Martin, Gil Clancy. One thing I loved about those guys, they knew me better than I knew myself.
There
right?
you go. You're absolutely right.
You know, and the thing is that they know how far I can go and how far I couldn't go. And they knew what I can do and what I could not do. Because basically they're the ones that taught me how to put my foot forward. They're the one that showed
exactly.
me how to do the jab. They're the one that
exactly.
showed me how hard my jab should be. So basically, they know you better than you know yourself. And
exactly.
the fact is that
the
I believed
that
in them.
To a right-handed fighter.
Right, I believed in them before I believed in myself. I added more of myself into me as I went on in life, as I looked at other fighters like Griffin and Laguna and looked at Dick Tiger and looked at other champions and learned a little bit out there. But these guys are the ones that mold Harold Weston, which you see
right.
in me walking this street. And it's the creation of Gil Clancy, my father, Emil Griffin.
Mm.
These guys, I took certain molds and stuff from that made me who I am. So they knew how I had. They knew how to talk to me to get me motivated. They knew
Absolutely.
When not to talk to me. And so
what
basically... I got to, you know, that's why I said I had to disagree, because they knew me to show me how I could get going and win fights.
But
well,
you know,
I didn't disagree with you. See, I didn't disagree with you. I agree with you on everything, but there comes a time that all that nurturing is inside of you, but you're by yourself.
Exactly.
And that's what
yeah.
I'm saying. It's a mind game. It's taking all that they injected into you, whether it's verbally, physically, or orders or what, to execute. You see? But you're the executioner.
Yeah,
that's
you're
true.
The one that,
so you're
that,
the one
that has to do
yeah.
what you're supposed to do.
Let me just quickly, but being the only wrestler on the panel surrounded by fighters here with Harold, Dustin, and Steve. Hey, Doc, let me make this analogy, okay? We had a wrestler.
I'm glad you did that, because I wanted you to come in as a wrestler. I mean, because, you know, being in shape, it's the rule in your profession.
Exactly,
yeah, but it's a different kind of shape, Doc, because I did some amateur boxing and... You know, the thing is, you know, I don't have to tell Harold and the fighters on the panel. You basically live in the gym. You got to do your road work. You got to do your sparring. I mean,
yep.
basically, I don't know how Durant would balloon up to 180 and then get ready for a fight, because, man, having to try to stay in shape all the time. But we had a wrestler called the Ultimate Warrior, Doc, Jim Helwig, who had a big-time stamina problem.
Now, his thing is he was basically playing like a wild man. That was his gimmick. And so his thing was, like, he'd always come running into the ring from the locker room at breakneck speed. And when he got to the ring, he started shaking the rope like a crazy person. Utterly insane. Well, Jim's problem was stamina, Doc, and by the time he got to running to the ring from the locker room and shaking the ropes, he was pooped, Doc, and he had no gas for the mat.
Hey,
he was done.
Busy,
he was done, Doc.
Hey, can I ask you guys something?
He would leap
really,
over the ropes.
I'm really dating myself here, but let me ask you guys something. Is there anyone here other than me that remember a wrestler named Haystack Calhoun?
I met him once.
Of course,
I knew
him
once.
Yeah.
He met him once. Yeah, they lifted him at
600. Hold on. Let me say something right now. Hey, this ain't the WWF show, okay? I know Rudy's ready to go now.
Well, now WWE, but your point's well taken.
Rudy, go get him, Rudy.
I met him once coming out of Madison Square Garden with Vince McMahon, now chairman of World Wrestling Entertainment. And, you know, they listed him at about 6'3 or so, maybe 6'4, 601 pounds, the true wide body with the cowbell and horseshoe around his, You know, I have to tell this one quick story about Haystack. You know, the 601 pounds was legit. He once wrestled a really great wrestler who I saw at the Garden countless times named Bruno Sammartino. And at the time, nobody had even come close to lifting this guy. Well, at the Garden, Bruno lifted this guy up on his shoulders, but nobody had even come close to lifting this guy. And the picture of him with Calhoun on his shoulders, you know, made the worldwide press, when you know, all around the world. Just a true strong man in the great Bruno Sammartino, the first and only person to ever get Haystack Calhoun off his feet.
You know, there's a great movie. There's an old movie called Requiem for a Heavyweight.
He's in that movie.
Okay, and if you look at that movie, at the very end of the movie, when Anthony Quinn is forced to become a wrestler, in the bottom of your screen, if you look there, he's about to wrestle Haystack Calhoun.
Haystack Calhoun,
Right. And you see Rory Calhoun there, too.
You know, it's funny you should mention that movie, because that is my all-time favorite fight movie of all time. Better than Raging Bull, better than all. That is my all-time favorite, with great performances by Anthony Quinn, Mickey Rooney, and the great one, Jackie Gleason,
the great Mickey who was, you know, Gleason, born in Brooklyn, and one of the great pool shooters and one of the great band leaders. I mean, he had some great band leaders, some of the best. And you talk about Anthony Quinn. Doc Stanley, Sports and Death on the Blake Network Rainbow Soul Channel, Sports and Death for the show. They're all here. That's Daniel Baby Lewis, Mel, Howard Kelsell, Junior, Harold Weston Jr., the first and only African-American match making the history of MSG and MSG Welterweight Champion, Skeeter Davis is here. And also, we got to take a little break, gentlemen. And go down.
Are we going to discuss the fight last night before the back, or is it dead?
Speaking of dead, I'm glad you brought that term up. Let's turn over to none other than Cincinnati Sea Wings and talk about the JETS. Sea Wings, what happened today, baby?
The question is, what didn't happen?
Good evening,
good evening, Sports and Death Nation.
How you doing, Sea Wings?
We knew going into Heinz Field that it would be a tough environment. The Jets started out good. I mean, the defense did the right thing. They had a three and out. They took over. The Jets went on a 8-play, 90-yard drive, 4 minutes, 48 seconds, which resulted in a 14-yard touchdown pass for Mark Sanchez to Santonio Holmes, and it put the Jets up at 7 over the Pittsburgh 3. The Jets went on to score a field goal in the second quarter, and they did, how can I put it? Let me use a good acronym. They did a Jimmy Hoffa. They disappeared, never to be seen again.
Oh, wow.
Never to be found again, see?
Huh?
I said they disappeared and never to be found again. Their offense or their defense couldn't be found.
Let me ask you.
Penalty.
Do you guys think that the Jets could use Flexico?
Yes. Absolutely. Terrell Owens and Chad Ochocinco and all those guys are still viable and still competitive, and they can give them a boost.
And not only could the Jets use somebody like that, Doug, the Giants could use a big 6'5", 6'6", guy in the red zone.
Well, then those stupid Giants should have signed up Randy Moss, because now he's with the 49ers.
Oh, that's not my guy right there.
My dark horse.
Was a lot of
Here's a question, then. Should you look at the Giants today, and you know they scored 40 some points, but they gave up 30 some points against Tampa Bay. They lost last week against Dallas. I mean, guys, I've been talking to Jerry Reese. I got to keep Jerry on the show. I'm talking to him today, but I mean, I got some happy. I mean, you're thinking the way the Giants running game has been going. And we're going to go back to our football guru, and even though it's on the other side of town to a certain degree, I mean, Z-Wings, do the Giants at this early stage show signs of missing Brandon Jacobs?
Big time. Hmm. And Mario Manningham.
Both of them.
You could put him in the same league as Victor Cruz. He's one of these guys that was a Trojan horse, that was a no-name guy in aspect. And if it wasn't for that catch, maybe the Giants wouldn't be the 2011 Vince Lombardi Trophy winners. That was a key catch. And he's the same as Braylon Edwards, the Jets. You need a tall guy with the speed, skill set to make these tough passes. And the Giants, they're missing pieces. And I said this last season, the off season, I told you guys in the Sports and Death Nation out there that the Giants, you're going to see the difference with a lot of these pieces that they lost. Now, we knew that they were going to lose some people due to the salary cap and different things like that, age and different, you know, other business decisions. But it shows. I mean, you see it now. They just barely really eat by Bay today because I don't think they played very well. And I said it that they were going to have a tough game against Tampa Bay. That is the Trojan horse or the black horse, as we talked about last week. It's not
right,
that.
Absolutely.
They're going to be the Trojan horse to the NFL this year.
Yeah, you see, one or two games do not a season make, but you're getting a taste, a disturbing taste, of how the Giants are little by little leaking and floundering around and just disintegrating. And then why? Because they broke up the chemistry of what they had last year because of, like you said, Doc, or C-Wings, the salary cap and the business.
The salary cap, and they're always reluctant to pay a player of color. And Chris Berman says, the Fox County Sports Def on the Blake Network Rainbow Show, Channel Sports Def Show. It's Sunday, and it's sports wrap time with the Piazzati and special guest tonight, Skeeter Mitchell. And you know, Chris Berman said something tonight, too. He said, you know what? And it's something you picked up, alluded to right now, Dusty. And if this, like I said, Dusty, don't call next week because we're agreeing too much late. So don't call next week. But
yes,
what you said, and Berman said this, too. Berman said, you know, already, in week two, we're seeing that Carolina, Tampa Bay, Seattle are teams that are going to be reckoned with. Washington with RG3. I mean, these are teams that, basically, C-Wings, they're no longer doormats.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Exactly. And a lot of these teams have rookie starting quarterbacks. Look at Washington.
Five of them.
If he continues on the way that he's going, he's going to be a behemoth, that team, because they have problems with the guys around Jason Campbell. They replaced them. They augmented the team, and then they replaced the quarterback because, remember, they had, you know, Rex Grossman, and it was just a big quarterback controversy down there. So they went and they got RG3 in the first round, second overall pick. He's showing that he's a monster already, just like Cam Newton. The only difference between RG3 and Cam Newton, two things. Cam Newton has 1 year under his belt. RG3 is a rookie.
And RGC has the weapons in place. Cam Newton have some weapons in place.
Some of them, yeah.
Oh, and two, you know, RG3 today, since the merger of the NFL and AFL, is only the second player to rush and throw for touchdowns and the exception of 60 yards. So that's been, you know, he's been quite amazing. The Hoopster was with us. I don't know, maybe he can't take the glee of Pittsburgh beating the Jets, but we'll definitely get him back and come on in. I know he just wanted to tell you how he felt about that game today. And we're looking at, you know, there was something said today, too. Doc Sandy Sports, and we're going to talk boxing. Of course, hoping the first lady of Blake Radio Sports can join us, Lady A, but she was the boxing special on Friday. And you know, there was something said today. I see his face now. And he said something today about the Cowboys. Here the Cowboys come off this tremendous win. They beat the Giants in MetLife Stadium. They beat the Giants on the road. They beat the Giants at home. And they come back and they lose today, the Seattle Seahawks beat them.
Amazing.
And he said a great line. He said, you know, the Cowboys, Sea Wings, just can't seem to deal with success.
Well, you can't stand prosperity, Doc.
You know, you got to give credit to some of these defenses, though. Some of these defenses are so awesome. I mean, you know, it's really. Like these rookie quarterbacks, it's going to be very interesting to see how they handle some of these complex defenses that they're about to face, you know?
Right.
It's
a maturation for them.
You know, the season is just like last season. You ain't going to be having no undefeated team going into the, you know, going to the playoffs no more. These guys are pretty much even a match, and that's what makes it so exciting watching football today. Because before you always had, you know, you're going to have Dallas, they're going to dominate that year, or they're going to have Pittsburgh, they're going to dominate, you know. Yeah, but now you don't have it no more. You can't pick who's going to win the Super Bowl now.
Right. You may have your suspicion. Yeah,
right.
You may have one you say is good, but you don't know. It's all a crapshoot until the end.
Right, till the end. Before you say, oh, yeah, what's the name going to win the Super Bowl? They're going to be in the playoffs. You know, Dallas is going to be there. Giants going to be there. You know, Pittsburgh. You knew, they knew that. L.A., you know, everybody just knew that. Now, no.
Absolutely. Now, it's a crapshoot.
You can't even pick it. You can't get close no more.
Now you got to take it literally, like they say, on any given Sunday.
Right. And you know what? And these players know it. They know it.
Because
it's a 16 game, right? They know if anybody get injured, they're in trouble on defense or offense. And the fact is that they still got to play hard because, you know, what's so good about it now, every game counts now. Every game counts.
You're right, Harold. No doubt.
If you look at
who's going to get hurt for the following week.
If you look at the Giants, the last Super Bowl, they were horrible. But we didn't taste or get a taste of the fact that they were great on the road. And then, by some mathematics, you know, this is how they figure out who's in, who's out, or who's eliminated. Some team wins, the other one loses, so you're out or you're in. And this is how, and then they wind up with their lousy record.
Again, you're so on the money because I'm looking at, here's Philadelphia, who's playing lousy football. Okay,
right.
Lousy football, and they're 2-0. They're 2-0, and they've won both games by 1 point. Here's a team you got to get scared of when they start playing. Well, I mean, this was the big thing last year. Philly didn't start gelling, and when they did, I mean, the Giants won that big game against the Jets, would put them in the position to leap ahead of Philly, because Philly might have been the team that have went to the Super Bowl. Because the one thing that Philly kept doing last year, they kept losing their early games, but they were winning. They were like 2-5, but they had won against Washington, and they had beat Dallas. So the two wins were big wins because they were division wins, and they had won them games on the road.
Exactly. And then when you looked at the Giants, the two soups, the other soup, the fresh soup, you know, they were in because of the mathematics, like I said, and
yeah.
they came in as a wild card. And correct me if I'm wrong, experts on football, that this was the first team in history to win a soup through
a
wild card.
No, they're not.
As
a card?
Well, that's what it was said by some of the announcers. So this is what I said. Correct me, because
this is about the third time. I've been Plunkett and his team came in, I believe, as a wild card.
Yeah,
Okay, I'm going by what was said by the announcers at that time. This is the first time the some
Dusty,
wild
you know, if we don't say it here, Dusty, you know, if we don't say it here, it ain't the truth. You know that, Dusty.
Hey, but
you know
what
that,
is correct, Doc, what is correct, pardon me for cutting you off, is, you know, basically the Giants were playing 500 ball until they beat the Jets and went on a roll from there.
Right.
They basically
right.
were 500 ball club.
Yeah,
oh,
well, I said that. I mean, the game that won them, which made them 9-7, was the game against the Jets, which that game, the New Year's Eve game, Christmas Eve game last year, was the game that whoever won that game was going to go into the playoffs, and who didn't win wasn't. And that's what it turned out to be. And the thing, Dante Phillips today, you know, the thing that was so good for the Giants was that in this case, because if we forget, which we haven't forgot, but that injuries, and they started to get better, and more importantly, they were playing all their games at home, because even though the Jet game was a road game, they were playing in MetLife Stadium. And then they were going to play the next two games at home. So
and
they
then
were,
the
they
injured
were,
guys came back when they came back fresh, too. That was a good thing for them.
Oh, yeah, they
for
came back
playoff.
Fresh, and
yeah.
they came back. There's nothing like, you know, sleeping in your own bed and being at home. And they
right.
had the next three games at home, not to mention they're at home for the holidays. So that was a pump up. Cincinnati C dropped out on us because he's getting some more information and stats. We're going to make sure Hoopsa gets back with us and let us know what's going on. I know Hoopsa is elated, plus there's some NBA stuff. Big news here, too, as we have to always do a little quick stop and shout-out, and something happened this week that anytime I hear his name, I must say something. Ladies and gentlemen, hold on just a second.
All day, all night, all the time. BlakeRadio.com, music for your mind, body, and soul.
Derek Sanderson Jeter, and I've said this before, and I finally got it down. Derek Jeter wears number 2 because it's apropos. He's second to no one as a player, as a person. He's everything that Joe DiMaggio was supposed to be and everything that Mickey Mantle wasn't. And that's a real live American hero. And this week, he went to number 10 on the all-time hit list as he supplanted the incomparable, the legendary Willie Mays. And anytime something happens with the name of Willie Mays, you just have to mention that. Jeter, just a great, great player. Only Yankee, you know, you look back at the 21st century, it's greater than Yankee ever, he's the only Yankee ever to get 3,000 hits. DiMaggio lost 3 years in the military. Roof was a pitcher before becoming a standout everyday player. Garrick, the tragic disease that took his life because he had 2,700 hits. So he was in route to being. But Derek Sanderson Jeter at shortstop, 38 years old, still playing that middle position. We take our hats off to just a great, great human being. I remember Derek's first year in town, up in Harlem at Christmas time, me, John Starks, and...
The great John Starks, yes.
Oh,
that's my
yeah,
guy.
That's your guy. That's your guy.
My
me,
guy,
John
Starks. Starks.
And this gentleman here, me, this gentleman here, hold on.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth.
We're not concluding, but we just wanted to hear the voice of Larry Hardesty. Larry, then the sports director of WLIB, BLS, Inner City Broadcasting. And there was Derek Jeter, his first year in the league up in Harlem, giving out turkeys with the kid. I got a picture, giving out pictures with turkeys, taking pictures, and getting ready to start his own foundation, Turn 2. Which is his foundation. He wanted to be like his idol, Dave Winfield. And, you know, Dave Winfield always had his foundation out there in San Diego and brought it with him in New York. And so we want to salute Derek Jeter as he continues to move up the list. And me and Dusty talked the other
yeah.
day, as we did Friday, and we're not going to stay, well, you can never be too long talking about Willie Mays. But we talked about how Derek and supplanting Willie, and you had to look at the fact that at Mays, and you got to go by what was. We talked about it, Dusty. If Mays doesn't move those 2 years in the military, that's got to be another 300 hits for him. If he doesn't play
right,
in Camel Street Park, you know, he's lost about another 300 hits. I mean, I looked at it, and he probably had been
second behind Pete Rose, or I may have had a good shot at 3,000. I was talking to a guy today. We were on the bus going out to the game, and, you know, it's amazing. Before we were getting up, he's talking about, did I know Burt Sugar? And I said, Burt Randolph Sugar? I said, Burt Sugar did his last radio show with us here on Sports and Network.
Right, yeah.
Me and my crew. And it's amazing. He said he was friends with Burt, and he said, but he hadn't seen Burt for 5 years. And, you know,
wow. This
is the thing about Sports in Depth is that, by the grace of God, we get to come together every Sunday, which is the Lord's Day, on the sixth day. God, in 6 days he made heaven, 7 days he rested. And it's good because, you know, people understand the importance of communication. In today's society, it's really amazing. Harold Weston always comes in here, and, you know, I have to tell Harold when to call. That's the rest of the crew. And, you know, Harold just sits there. Harold, are you here? Yeah, I'm here. It's you know, the communication in today's society with all the high-tech means of communication. You know, you got email, you got telephone, you got the cell phone, you can fax. It's just a horde of ways. And, Charles Barkley and Larry Flint, the publisher of Hustler magazine, said two things that were so relevant years ago. They said, you know, two of the most abused words in the English language is friend and I love you. I mean, because, you know, how do you have a friend you ain't talked to in 5 years? I mean, you know, when you were a kid, I mean, you couldn't wait to get to school to hang out with your friends. Come home, couldn't hate to hang your friends, you know what I mean? And so friendship, I read something, friendship is also not just for enjoyment, but it's also a service. And only heaven itself is better than a friend that's a friend. And I've always just thought that, you know, communication is so vital in relationships with family, relationships with friends, relationship with your better half, you know, in and outside the bedroom. And there's just always a really delight here to get together with my posse family every Sunday. And you people out listening out there across the world, like I've said this before, and you can call it braggadocious, but the truth is the truth. You can't meet a better conglomeration of people here. And so many times, you've learned so many things here that you hadn't heard any place else. Harold Weston talked about how he, the first fighter, just said, hey, no. I get all the money, I pay all the tax, and then I pay everybody else. It was C-Wings who told us that Obama was the president that took out bin Laden. There's so many. It was anything from the WWF has always been Rooney. So, you know, our idea here is education, learn, teach. You know, you come here. When you leave here, you want you to be a better person, of God first, without question. But Sports in Depth is about learning. It's about teaching. It's that great line, Muhammad Ali, service to others is the room you pay for your earth here on earth. Life's most persistent but urgent question is, what are you doing for others? And the Son of Man came to serve and not be served. And, you see guys like Jeter who are putting back in the community because there's always some talk about people not coming back. And anytime, like I said, I get a chance to salute unequivocally the greatest baseball player that ever lived is Willie Howard Mays, number 24, which was Jackie Robinson's number backwards. I once asked Mr. Mays, did he realize that? He said, no. He said, I took 24 because that's the number that they gave me. And what we're giving you here tonight is the sport to wrap up. The Giants, even their record at 1-1, they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Can I say something? Did you know that Emmanuel Stewart's in the hospital?
No.
Yes.
When did he go in?
Yeah, last week when he went in. He's got cancer.
Wow. He couldn't make the announcement last night, so Roy Jones took his place.
First I heard of it.
Ladies and gentlemen,
it happened last week. I know the guys in Detroit. They called me up and told me that.
But Hal, you know the guys all over the world. Cut it out, Hal. The guys in Detroit. You probably got a big switchboard. You've got the African American contacts the way Dusty got the little Ouija board in Consuela, Enrique, that whole neighborhood there. You know, everybody calls
South American
cartel. So he's got the Latin. You got the African American. But what, ladies and gentlemen, I've just taken the words out of my mouth. And here it is. You haven't heard it any place else. The last great trainer in the game, Emmanuel Stewart.
Legendary trainer, Doc.
Speaking
of greats and legends, please don't forget to let us know what's happening to the great and legendary Sports in Depth Hall of Fame, the doings and what's going on.
Yeah, you know what, Rooney, what we're going to do at the top of the hour. Oh, no, we'll do it real quickly. Let's do it real quickly now. Let's take a little break. We'll come back. We'll do that. But we also want you people out there to keep Emmanuel Stewart in your prayers and keep all the panel in your prayers.
And by the way, Emil Griffin, too, he's not doing too well.
No, he's not.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Al.
He's been sick for quite a while, just hanging out with a, oh God, I hate to say it, but like a thin thread of health.
Yeah.
He's like borderline and you know, it's getting wild, then he gets better.
I remember I have a picture here.
Yeah.
You speak about Emmanuel Griffin, and now it's a great thing, a segue into the Trust in God Sports and Entertainment Artifacts Museum. And I remember, and that was a great thing about the Madison, when Madison Square Garden, and the lights turned out in the garden, when Harold Weston gathered all his stuff and left there as Max Maker and John Condon, who passed away on the Friday the 13th, October 1989, that's when the lights went out. I mean, everything else has been, in the words of Marion Boykin, boxing-wise, is perpetrating the fraud. And the great thing about the garden is, you know, Harold and John, they gave you those two fights a month at the old Felt Forum, and then you knew, if you just hang on, we're going upstairs two or three times a year. Yeah, we're going upstairs. They're going to take us upstairs two or three times. And when you, the thing about what made that so special was because when you came to the fights, it seemed more so when they were doing a card in the Felt Forum, yeah, there's Emil Griffin. There's Willie Pep. Oh, here goes Joe. I first met Joe Frazier, our friend Joe Frazier, as he was coming up. I had asked John Condon to do a show with me. He couldn't because at that time Yank Durham had passed, and he had to be down at the funeral. And but you saw Willie Pep, Ray Leonard. There go before Harold became. I thought, Harold Weston, man. Camacho was right, but Jersey Joe Walcott. I mean, Jersey Joe Walcott. Okay, Willie Pep. You know, Carlos Ortiz, Emil Griffin. These are the guys that came, and I have a great picture of me, you know, sitting ringside upstairs, and he met my daughter there. I got a picture here now. I'm looking at it. Emil Griffin. Okay. Demony, Wilford Benitez, that's Jose Torres, John Condon, Benitez and Demony. Then I have another one with Demony. And Emil, when he was in better health and mental state, would always ask, "How's my girl?" And for a while, Demony would always send him, we give him some birthday, or Christmas cards and stuff like that. Great champion. Harold said he felt, you know, that Emil was one of the guys that not only could have gave Ray Robinson his money's worth, but could have beat Ray Robinson. And we.
Oh, I doubt that. I doubt that.
Well,
how when he said that? That was great stuff. I still want to hear more about that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we got
Emil
a lot of time.
Let me just put you, whoever said that, let me just put you straight. Ray Robinson stopped fighting black fighters when he became pretty much champion of the world.
Okay.
You're right.
He stopped fighting black fighters after fought Tommy Bell, when Tommy Bell dropped him. Bell should have got the decision.
But I'm gonna
give you some history. He made more money fighting the other guys.
He only fought two black fighters, if you can think. Tommy Bell, who knocked them down in a split decision that a lot of people thought Tommy might have got, but Ray's attribute,
but
he went down face first, got it, won the fight, and the only reason why he probably fought I can't think of his name, who took
Randy,
the title
Randy
from
Turpin?
Randy, he fought Turpin again to get the title back, but, I mean, it's a known fact, and this is why I've always said Ali was my number one guy, because Ali fought everybody. I mean, he never would fight Charlie Burley.
That's right.
Right.
Exactly.
Charlie
You're right.
Charlie Burley.
My point is, he's one of the great unsung fighters of pugilistic history. My point is, Ray did the right thing. He picked his opponents. I'm not saying he wasn't a great fighter, but he picked his opponents. He did the right thing to get his name very established. But at the same time, he did not fight all the great fighters that was out there at that particular time.
Hal, do you really think, honestly, Hal, do you really think Emil Griffith, as great a champion as he was, revered, do you think he could have stood up against welterweight Sugar Ray Robinson?
Yes, and you know why? If you ever look at the film, and this is where a lot of guys, this is why I love this thing about boxing today. You guys just look at the spurts. I look at the whole 33 minutes of the round. Ray Robinson never fought 3 minutes a round. He fought in spurts. Griffin
because of the fact that he was a fighter who economically said, I'm going to hurt you with what I have, but I'm not going to exhaust myself. I mean,
right.
it was a foregone conclusion.
Right. That's
If you look at modern-day fighters today, if you look at, he's not great by any stretch of the imagination, but you look at a Floyd Mayweather who was very comfortable slapping you with 15 punches, and then he just chuck and jive the rest of it because those 15 punches were enough for him to win the round. That's the way Ray Robinson was.
There you go.
The way he did it. Yes,
Griffin would have went through his combinations and fighting every round and gotten the inside. Well, Ray wasn't an inside fighter. Believe me, Ray Robinson would have had a hell of a time with Abel Griffin.
Okay, Harold.
Yeah, he would have been working overtime.
Let's go up one weight class now. How do you think the middleweight Emil Griffith would have done against the middleweight Sugar Ray Robinson?
It would pretty much been the same thing, but I mean, you got to understand that Ray was just Ray. Ray wasn't going to change his style. Ray fought the guys that he fought because they didn't fight as hard. Okay, the guy you know who and the reason why he beat him the first time was Joey Giordano. No, not Joe. What's the guy's name?
Jake LaMotta.
Right. Well, Jake LaMotta beat him because Jake stayed busy. And that's how he knew how to beat Ray, right?
And this is why they're saying, well, look how great Ray Robinson was because he beat him the rest of the other four times. Because Ray Robinson said, I ain't mixing with this sucker. I'm going to fight him my way. And, of course, Jake LaMotta was Jake LaMotta, but Ray was not going to let him touch him. And he was going to fight him his way.
And the reason why Jake LaMotta was the first one to beat Ray because Ray wasn't used to nobody throwing that many punches, keep coming forward, took his shot, and keep on coming. And that's what threw Ray Robinson off. He wasn't a three-round fighter. He wasn't a three-minute round fighter.
I wish Ray had fought Charlie Burley. I really think the crowds would have really loved that.
Oh, my God.
But Charlie Burley,
they didn't want
Charlie
that fight.
Burley was awesome, wasn't he?
Ray didn't want that fight. They didn't want nothing to do with Charlie Burley.
There is a story that Dave Anderson has. Rainbow Solar Channel Sports is having the show. That's right. The Jets lost today. The Giants won. It's Sports in Depth, the sports wrap-up. NHL has a lockout. There'll be no NHL, it seems like, again this year. Derek Sanderson Jeter passed Willie Mays on the all-time 3,000 hit list. There's a story that they tell, and Ray Anderson told the story. They even said that Charlie Burley went up to Ray's restaurant and tried to get Ray to fight. But supposedly a friend turned to Ray and said, hey, Ray, when are you going to fight Charlie Burley? And supposedly Ray turned to that friend and said, hey, I thought you were my friend.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's a very famous quote.
I don't know the origin, but it's a very famous quote. Anybody who talked favorably about Charlie Burley to Ray Robinson became his enemy.
If you want to talk about really something, when Charlie Burley smacked Ray Robinson.
I heard about that.
So the thing is that Ray didn't move then. The one that fighter.
Ray didn't want to be in the same zip code as Charlie Burley.
Well, okay. So you asked me if Angel Griffin had a shot of beating Ray Robinson. Yes, I think so. 15 rounds? Yes.
Bobby Derrick, sports up on the plate. We're going to Rainbow Soul Challenge. Sports up. Just a quick break. Come back. The Hoops is here. We're going to talk JT and Jets, but NBA basketball, as it seems that the man that went on the West Coast may stay there because, well, back to back. That's how it will be. Doc Stanley, Sports Up on the Blake, Rainbow Soul Channel Sports Up Show. We want to say hello to Rosie out there in Bota Redonda in Brazil. And Brazilian news, the Brazilian government's going to put together $1 billion to help train their athletes to get ready for the 2016 Olympics. And also at the same time, they will be getting ready also for the World Cup. Okay, gang, everybody say, Rosie is here. Everybody say hi to Rosie.
Hi, Rosie.
Hi, Rosie.
I'll never forget this. Hello, my friend. I'm writing to you in a email. She said hello to all of us here. She's our number one listener. We're really taken back by that, you know. Listen, there are a group of you out there. You hear us. You can reach me, DocStanley@AOL.com. Please check out DocStanleySports.com and my blog, DocStanley Sports In Depth, blogspot.com. And as always, in the sex act, we'll get back into the Trust in God Sports and Defense Entertainment Artifacts Hall of Fame. And there, I have pictures of me and Israel, some autograph of Emil Griffin gloves. Have a big set signed by a host of Harold, Emil Griffin, Ali, Duran. Probably of all the boxing stuff I have, I think the most, I just call it a million-dollar jacket. And working Rosie stuff out, she said, you know, what Rosie has done, she's taken Sports In Depth and not only made it something for her to listen to, but she's using it as a vehicle to learn English. She's doing well. She just wrote me, I'll never forget this. Hello, my friend. I'm writing in your email. She understands everything, which says a lot about the panel and you guys who are conveying. This is about teaching. You know, I tell my Brazilian friends, they're so concerned about speaking English fluently. I said, listen, you know, all you want to do is to be understood. To say, you know, if you tell me that your aunt is, a lot of times they'll say, well, I want to speak like you. So you're not going to speak like me. You're always going to have an accent, you know. But I will understand you if you say, well, I went up early morning. Okay, you got up early this morning, you know. My aunt is twisted. No, you mean your ankle. I understand. And one of the things that Don King, who I found out I was the first man ever to give him on the air radio interview when I was working for my first mentor, the late great Dr. Frank Bannister. And Don hired me when he found out I was a police officer to do some work with Tony Tucker. Tony Tucker was fighting Lennox Lewis, and that's when I first got a chance to see some things behind the scenes that Harold sees, that, you know, all the fighters are basically all together. They live in the same complex, you know, one is training in one gym. And Eric Brown, we all decided when we got to Arizona, this guy came and he was going to make us all these one-of-a-kind leather jackets. And then after the design was made, he would delete the design and you'd only be the person to have the jacket. So I got one that said, that has some boxing gloves in the back. And I said, what I was going to do, I'm going to have just inside the gloves autographed. Inside the gloves autographed. And I did that. I had inside the gloves autographed Ali, Joe Frazier, Marvin Hagler, Duran, Sugar Ray Leonard. And I gave the jacket to our friend Jose Torres, who, when Jose Torres fought against Willie Pastrani for the light heavyweight championship of the world, March 3rd, I believe, 1964, it was the first time ever that you had another anthem played in Madison Square Garden or at a major fight. And Jose had asked to have the Puerto Rican national anthem played. And they told Jose, okay, fight night, they came in about 5 minutes before the fight and said, okay, 5 minutes will come to get you, be ready. And Jose said, well, what about the anthem? They said, oh, listen, you know, we won't be able to play the anthem. Jose said, you know what? If you won't be able to play the anthem, you won't have to worry about a fight. I'm not coming out. And in turn, that's the first time ever you had another anthem outside the national anthem played. I gave Jose the jacket, and I'm thinking Jose is going to sign inside the gloves. Now, look, he's throwing it across his lap knee, and he's signing on one of the lapels. And, you know, God always has a plan. So I thought I had everybody else sign it. That jacket, just about every great champion of the 20th century of this era on that jacket. I mean, I don't think there's a champion you can name. You're right. Harold West is on that jacket, too, an MSG welterweight champion. Ali, you know, if you can think of a name of merit, they're on that jacket. And in the front part of the jacket, I had outstanding referees, Mills Lane, Carlos Ortiz, Richard Steele, Arthur McCanty, the man who refereed the Ali Frazier fight. A small section, I have a little print done by the great legendary Leroy Neiman. In the back, Bill Gallo did something as Marion Boykin. And that, I think, is the most prestigious of all the stuff
that I have from a boxing standpoint. There's a hold 'em. I have the hand wraps from the first fight that Mike Tyson ever had, which Harold Weston was the matchmaker. What they did that night, that was the night that Milton McCoury was going to fight Donald Corey for the unified welterweight championship of the world. Took my son Melvin to that fight. And what they did, you know, the genius of the people at Madison Square Garden, they knew people wanted to see that fight. So Tyson fought first that night, knocked this guy out, and then you could just go ahead and see that fight. And he gave me one of the hand wraps from that. Juan Laporte, the first Puerto Rican ever to win the featherweight championship of the world.
And my old
Miranda,
schoolmate.
Yeah, your schoolmate, Talton guy, have a pair of his autographed boxing shoes. There's a horde of things. Check the site. We try to talk every week about it. We're going to put some YouTube videos up on my blog. And like I said, Emil Griffith is there. Harold Weston is there. Skeeter, we can get you here too, baby. Get something to me.
I got to ask a question because something came over me last night when I was looking at the fights last night, all
uh-huh.
the fights,
uh-huh.
Showtime, I mean HBO and on Showtime.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the American fighters?
We just don't have any more good ones.
It was all Mexican celebration.
It was Mexican Independence Weekend. So, I mean, they sold out both fights there.
Well,
that was amazing.
I understand that, but my point is, couldn't you have one American on the other side of the ring?
You're right, Harold.
You know what I say, Harold? It's the funny thing about America. You know, you look at the Olympics, and we had Gabrielle Douglas, and we had Serena and Venus Williams. And, you know, when they talked about what they did, there was always a problem. You know, it always seemed in America that when an athlete, when you put African-American, there's always issues as opposed to when it's just an American. You know, you look at how Barry Bonds was blackballed out of baseball. I mean, his trainer said that he didn't do it. They said his trainer was lying.
But my point is, Doc, when I'm trying to get across,
mm-hmm.
I looked
right.
at a show last night, okay?
Exactly. You're right.
But you got to understand that on pay-per-view, and on
mm-hmm.
Showtime.
Yeah.
Well, Showtime
right.
started at 9 o'clock. 9 o'clock. They had four fights on Showtime, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you had, and I was going back and forth with the paper. My point is, I ain't see one American. I don't care if it was white or black.
Exactly.
Fellas, can I interject something?
There was some guy named Lee, who's a college graduate, who was a heavyweight. He fought a four-rounder, but they highlighted him in between Canelo Alvarez and some other guy.
I'm talking about the major build-up. There was
right.
no American.
The televised fights, yeah.
Well, now, we have to look at that. I mean, it's long been known that Bob Arum, you know,
wow.
favors and deals with the Latin fighters. I mean, is this Harold? Is this promoters?
What I'm saying now
that's what I'm talking,
is
talking.
That we don't have no fighters in the
okay.
United States of America.
Okay.
That's simple as that.
Right.
You know, it's funny you say that, too, because on my blog, the stories that have been getting the biggest hits are my fight stories. So I thought about you today, Harold. I said, well, you know, we don't have them here, but the rest of the world has them.
It's all
right. The thing is that last night's two cards, almost symbolically, an invisible sign says, non-Latinos do not apply. Because that's what you have.
Right.
I'm telling you, non-Latinos do not apply because this is all a Latino show, especially because it's a Mexican independence. So they were highlighting the Mexicans. In fact, I felt deprived. There was only one or two Puerto Ricans. I said, whoa, what's going on here? But
we had nothing.
Hey, fellas,
exactly
let me tell you,
nothing.
I was in the barbershop.
Totally
this
nothing.
Is really great. I was in the barbershop the other day.
Mm.
And we were talking about the late, great Teofilo Stevenson, right? Now, we know that America boycotted the Olympics in 1980, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here was the question. Now, we know that T.O. won three gold medals.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, wouldn't he have won, or would he have won, a fourth gold medal if he'd have went to the 80 talking about 84. When Tyrell Biggs was the heavyweight.
Right.
Don't you think T.O. would have beaten Tyrell Biggs?
Yeah, but let me ask you a question. Didn't
Felix Savón, his own Cuban, knocked him out of the box in one of those tournaments. That's why he didn't make the Olympics, and Savón then came in and won two. Correct me if I'm wrong, because Teofilo Stevenson's conqueror was his own fellow Cuban, Felix Savón.
Yeah.
And that's probably why you had the
Dusty, hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, again. And you know, I know it's Dusty, please forgive us, you know. But again, on the real side.
Can I shut up now? No, you got to keep talking.
On the real side, this is why Sports in Depth is what it is. You surround yourself with geniuses and you look like a genius. And Dusty, again, I mean, this is something else that you've never, ever heard anyplace else. And that's why on Sundays or whenever you see Sports in Depth, you got to tune in. Because this is the greatest collaboration of minds. If we talk politics, if we talk horse racing, if we talk marbles, if we talk Consuelo and Henrique, hey, they can do it. And this is something that you know, Dusty, you're right on the money. Nobody even talked about that. Skeeter, you brought it up. And once again, Sports in Depth is about a lot of things, and education is one of the big things. And we always want to let you know that. Dusty, come back with that in just a second. We got to do a quick commercial.
And it's amazing that last night's conversation in HBO, Teofilo Stevenson's name was brought up in conversation about great Cuban fighters and how, if it hadn't been communist under Castro's regime, which it still is, Stevenson would have made a tremendous name for himself. He was 6'5", a tremendous fighter, power, I mean, in both hands, ring savvy, the whole nine yards, and unfortunately, because of the communist standing, he couldn't come to the States. Correct me if I'm wrong, everybody, wasn't there, maybe it was just a commercial ploy, but wasn't there some challenge to match him up with Ali?
Yeah, there was a talk. There's two things. They told the great story of my man, Duran. Mm-hmm. Castro flew Cholo into Cuba, and they're having dinner. And over dinner, he asked Cholo, how would Stevenson do against Ali? And Cholo, I guess, put his plate down, looked up real quick, and said, Ali will kill him. And after
that's
he
true.
Ate, he after
that's
he ate,
true.
After
leave it to Duran.
He said, "Ali
no
will kill him."
No diplomat is he.
And Castro said, "When you get through eating, you get on the next plane back to Panama. In fact, take it with you. You got to go.
I don't need you.
You got to go. You know, thanks a lot.
But,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But you know what happened though?
There was a time.
You know that John Condon and Madison Clark, they brought Stevenson and part of the Cuban team here for an exhibition. I saw Stevenson live fight him and some other Cuban. They had him in the garden. It's got to be early 70s, and before I was a cop, so it was about 70, anywhere from 71 to 73. They brought him here, and you know, he was the idol of
it was
of,
a lot of travel? I'm surprised.
Yeah. Well, you know, they worked out somewhere. They brought them all together. You know, it was a whole group.
Well, it was the United States versus Cuba in Madison Square Garden.
That's what it was. What year was that? About 72?
Yeah, that was around about 1972, 73.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Because I remember that because I was in the military at the time.
It was a heartbreaker because I said, oh my God, to get this guy.
Hold on, everybody, we're gonna do a spot, but everybody, Rosie has to go to bed. Everybody say good night to Rosie. Say good night to Rosie.
Good night, Rosie. Good night.
Take care, baby. Take care.
There she is. Gang, hold on. We're gonna come back, talk to more about Stevenson, and let Hoopster talk some basketball, and also talk about his Pittsburgh Steelers beating up on the New York Jets, once again, you know, some things never change.
Just pitiful.
Yeah, it's pitiful, yo. I can't, you know, I don't know. Are you talking about the game or the Jets? That both are the same thing, you know.
Pitiful. Just pitiful. That's all I got to say.
Okay. Rosie says good night. Take care. She loves us all. We got to play this quick plug here. We'll be back. Doc Stanley, Sports and Depth on the Blake Little Network. Rainbow Soul is the station. Sports and Depth is the show. The Giants and Jets are both 1-1. Eli Manning with a 500-yard passing game and Knicks with almost 200 yards. Don't anybody say a word.
The opinions and views expressed by the host and guest are not necessarily the views and opinions of the Blake Radio Network. Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
And okay, it's bound for the second half. Part two, Sports in Depth, Larry Hardesty.
Welcome to Sports in Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Larry Hardesty today. Larry was covering, he's a sideline reporter for the New York Jets, but today he was covering for ESPN. He was doing the game for ESPN, the Giant game, and he'll probably, well, we'll see him in a couple of weeks when the Jets are back in town, and we'll also catch him up in New England. But the greatest African sportscaster in the history of New York City radio, the one and only Larry the Legend Hardesty, and we want to say happy birthday to his son, Shamari, on the 2nd of September. My son, Melvin Stanley Jr. on the 9th.
Don't worry, Doc, you're like a father. Don't worry about it.
Hey, you're like a son too, Rooney. On the 7th was the independence of Brazil, and also the legendary Gloria Gaynor, the only female artist and the only disc artist ever to win a Grammy. The 8th is Eric Telford, my good buddy from the military. The 9th, Mel Stanley Jr. Happy birthday to Elkie. Yesterday is her birthday. She's in Sao Paulo, Brazil, and other birthdays will be coming along. And
Doc, before you finish, I have to make this announcement just quickly. I think I'd be remiss if I didn't say it, Doc. I believe yesterday, I think that is the last pro bout that referee Joe Cortez is working. I think that was his last bout. Yesterday, Doc, that Joe Cortez
was that the main event between Martinez and Chavez, or the main event because Lopez and Alvarez?
No, Canelo Alvarez.
You know,
it was
a Canelo Alvarez
fight.
A friend of his in my building on 64th Street, Harry, and you know his daughter, they won a big lawsuit against one of the tire companies. And they had a big lawsuit. I forgot, it was a car wreck, some kind of incident with the tires, and he wind up winning a big lawsuit. Ortiz is one of his posters here. He's been one of the top referees. We wish him all the best. I'm not sure. I don't know if Tony Perez was the first Hispanic referee, but once again, going back to the Trust in God Sports Hall of Fame, Tony refereed the second Ollie Frazier fight. There was a second round where Tony thought he heard the bell, and Ollie was really getting ready, it seemed like, to take Joe out. And there's some things were said, and Tony had a suit against Ollie at one time. But the gist of everything is we have inside the Trust in God Sports and Deaf Hall of Fame a towel used by the outstanding referee Tony Perez, who's now a judge, and so is his wife. And as also, we're going to keep in prayer Emil Griffith, the great welterweight champion. Also keep in prayer our good friend, I gotta give a call tomorrow, Emmanuel Stewart. And with that,
And Doc, before you finish that up, I also just have to say, because he looks so good, and I kind of got a little emotional seeing him. It was really great seeing Paul Williams at the fights the other day also.
Did you hear the interview? Did you hear the interview with Jim Gray? Oh,
no,
man.
What did he say?
It brought tears to your eyes because he was a man.
He really did.
I mean, you talk about guts, and fortitude.
Yeah.
He explained, and, you know, it was heart-wrenching when he explained to him what happened to him.
The reason why
he was leaving a friend's house, and he said, no, I wasn't drinking like everybody else says, and I was speeding. Normally I ride my bike, and I was on the highway going home, and I got cut off by this car, and then I tried to go to the side. And when I went to the side, the gravel on the road spun his bike up in the air. And you talk about weird, weird accidents. In fact, it's in YouTube, the interview. Mm. And when he came down, oh, God, I got goosebumps. He came down head first on the gravel, and that's what broke his neck.
Yeah,
head first. If he had landed on the rib or an elbow, something like that, boom. And he said, look, I have all the confidence in the world with all the high tech and all that I will walk again, maybe go back into the ring. You know, of course, he bolsters himself. But the emotional thing is that he says, look, this is the will of God. There's nothing I can do about it. He put
he
me here,
fought,
but now I
he
have
to. He supposed to fight on that card, right, Dusty? He supposed to fight that night, right?
He was going to fight Canelo. Yeah, oh, last night, right.
That's right.
He was
going to
fight Canelo Alvarez.
That's right.
And, you know, the kindness, the kindness of Canelo Alvarez is that he brought him to the fight.
Yeah.
He had a ringside ticket for Paul Williams. He extended a hand of friendship or brotherhood, and he brought him over. And he was interviewed by Jim Gray, and he said, look, I have a family. I feel well. I'm confident that hopefully I'll walk again. But if it doesn't happen, I have my family.
This is the difference between these fighters today and fighters back in our day. We listened to our trainers and managers and avoided life. One thing we knew, if you're a top contender, especially being a world champion, Griffin, like I told you before, Griffin used to was on a motorcycle, and Gil told him to get his ass off it. And Joe Frazier had one, and Dan told him to get his ass off it, okay?
My point is
this. When you are trying to train, you know, you're going to do what you want to do, and you ain't listening to your people, you are going to fail down the road.
Right.
And I'm going to give you a good point, too, on Julio Cesar Chavez Jr. If you saw that 24/7 where he called the train up at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh yeah, did you see that?
Talking about his
workout. I saw that.
Go ahead, Harold. Tell that story, Harold.
And
tell that story.
Come, get out of bed because I feel like working out right now, and then I don't have to work out later on today. My point is that when you start putting your body through those different times and conditioning, you are definitely destroying your process of developing your system for a fight. And that's the reason why this kid is not going to be his father or nobody else. He is just lucky his father is who his father is, and he got a gift for a world championship fight. For him to be great because he's got this attitude he has that he wants to do it his way, he will not make it.
Can we go back?
The Paul Williams, did he have a helmet on, Dusty?
I heard he did.
You know something? I don't know. It wasn't mentioned yesterday. I'm assuming he did because it is a rule that you have. You know, in fact, I live in Ozone Park. This is Motorcycleville, okay? And you guys get the picture. This is Motorcycleville here. There's a kid next door to me who's a member of one of these motorcycle clubs. My God, on any given Sunday, you couldn't even walk through this block, much less traffic. And when they start roaring out of the street into Rockaway Boulevard, into Bensonhurst and Bay Ridge, and I mean, it stops traffic. Now, there is a minimum regulation, which I think is ridiculous. You got to have a helmet on, okay? Now, I ask myself, what about your elbows? What about your knees? What about this? I've seen girls in shorts and tank tops, but that's okay because she has a helmet on. What's going to happen to her kneecaps? I mean, it's ridiculous, and they're riding piggyback with the other dude. You know, so...
Dusty, I do that in Brazil, so leave it alone.
Yeah.
I do that in Brazil, okay?
No,
I'll
it's,
take you back
it's crazy. It's crazy. And, Harold, you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
My kid says, Daddy, can you buy me a motorcycle? I said, the day you work and earn your dollars.
You get your own.
I ain't buying none of that.
Yeah. Now, Dusty, he was in the wheelchair, right?
Yeah. Oh, yes. No, he was in the wheelchair, but there was no mention of the helmet. But I'm assuming by regulations you have to have at least a helmet.
I remember, I got that email. I was in Brazil, and Lady A sent it to me, and we'll keep him and everybody, not just all the Paul Williams in the world, and keep them in our prayers. And Hoopsa, let's get to Hoopsa for a minute. Hoopsa, Jets, no surprise they lost.
No
talk
surprise.
About that. And but you said
Oh, there's another. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. No.
Okay, how'd you
getting back to the motorcycles, and I think I told you this story maybe 55 years ago. You know, you and I, Doc, have been married for 40 years, and we still fight 43, like honeymoon. 43. I'm sorry.
Wow.
The anniversary is next
Beautiful.
Week. Anyway, but speaking of motorcycles, and I'm glad you brought it up, Harold. First round draft choice of the Pittsburgh Steelers, a Puerto Rican named Rivera,
with
sign-in bonus money.
Yeah,
he bought
himself
a motorcycle.
Yeah.
Guess what? The first night out on the highway, bam, Rivera was gone. No more crash kills.
I remember it. I remember Rivera. Yeah.
Right. The Orange Man from Syracuse.
Syracuse.
The Orange Man. Okay. First round draft choice. I forgot what team he went to. Bonus money, buys himself a motorcycle, and bam, gone. Now, this guy survived, but I don't know if he's still alive, but he had to go back to Puerto Rico because he was a paraplegic. You're right, Harold. Why they buy these garbages, I don't know. Salvador Sanchez, the featherweight, Carlos Monzon, I think. All these guys, I don't know why.
Hold on. Back up. The accident was with Salvador. He was on a motorcycle?
He was on a motorcycle. Monzon was in a motorcycle, okay?
Hold on. Ladies and gentlemen, you're hearing, because, you never, or your memory's being refreshed. You people out there in motorcycles, I think you kind of can take heed to this. You know, a high-speed, a 10-speed bike can be dead. I think Steve Glazer, my dear friend in Brazil, said he was on a motorcycle. He woke up one day in the hospital, don't know how he got there. He was all right. He told me, he said, Doc, don't ever get on a motorcycle, because if you get on a motorcycle, somewhere, sometime, somehow, you're coming off. And there's a great line, whatever speed you come off that motorcycle, that's the speed you hit, whatever you hit.
I think
Dusty have said it plain and clear. Walk there, jog there, don't motorcycle there. And I think that's
thing is, when you're, let's say, a celebrity, okay, and you're valuable and everything, the last thing, you probably try to avoid everything that can be dangerous to harm you.
Thank you, Godfather Harold. You're right.
You know, that is, you are an important commodity to everybody. Guys don't understand. I mean, you can get hurt in a car. I mean, they'll say, well, if I'm in a car, I get hurt. Yes, you can. But a motorcycle,
that's the worst.
One thing you try to avoid. Because we know
that you get in a car accident, somebody hits you. There's a survival chance. You hit somebody. There's some shelter there. That motorcycle, like Steve said, you know, when you come off that motorcycle, whatever speed you're on, that's what you. Ladies and gentlemen, it's very simple. You heard Harold.
I know a lot of athletes got hurt on motorcycles too, Doc. I know a lot of athletes got hurt on motorcycles too. Jason Williams just played with Duke. With the Bulls, he got hurt. Ben Roethlisberger. Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah, he got hurt on motorcycle.
Real quick,
they should hear the Paul Williams interview, because when he said, I came down head first, I said, Jesus Christ, God, why couldn't he just fall on his leg or his elbow? No, it was like a catapult going back.
Like I said, you never question the good Lord. You never question
the
good Lord.
You know, Doc, these days a lot of professional athletes have written into their contract upon their signing that they're barred from participating in certain extracurricular activities.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing about boxers. You know, people always talk that. I remember talking with I forgot where we were at, Dick Enberg, and people, because the boxers always get this thing of being reckless and, you know, dangerous. And he said something that I'll never forget. Enberg said, you know, they're always questioning the intellect of boxers. I mean, because you know they get that heart and courage. He said, but, you know, when that guy says, gentlemen, start your engines, you know, those, you got to question those guys, too. Great line there. Hope so. Let's get you real quick.
Hey, fellas, I'd like to interject a point here. We were talking about Salvador Sanchez.
Go ahead.
In the year 2011, a former sparring partner of Sanchez, his name was Jose Cabrera, he said that Salvador Sanchez, at the time of his accident, was on his way to see his mistress. Now,
I think that was a terrible thing to say. You know, I think it's bad to discredit the man at that point. But the reason I bring this up is because they interviewed a few members of Salvador Sanchez's family. And it was reported that he was only going to have maybe two more fights. And one of those fights, he was going to move up and fight Alexis Aguayo. What do you guys think happened in that fight?
Jesus Christ. That would have been a monster fight.
That would have
been
a war.
That's the in 50 words or less, who you like for the fight? Who are you picking that fight?
You know something? That's a good question. Ricardo Pajarito Moreno, that's the guy.
Dusty, all my questions are good questions. Just answer it.
who I would, Salvador and Alexis Aguayo?
No, Salvador and Ali. Yes, Salvador and Alexis, Dusty.
The best man wins,
I would have leaned towards Salvador.
Why?
Salvador won that fight, Doc.
Why? Because Salvador was a boxer puncher who withstood the rocks that Wilfredo Gomez threw at him and was knocked out. What was it? Knocked down twice, Harold? He came back and knocked out Wilfredo Gomez.
That fight against Gomez, he never went down. He never went down. Never went down.
He did.
No, he didn't.
No, he never did.
He knocked Gomez down.
Yeah.
I saw that fight at the Felt Forum through Harrow and John Condon. No, he never went down.
I didn't see the fight, but I read what
he never went down. He never, nobody ever knocked him down.
No, he never went down. That's it.
Nobody ever knocked him down.
You know, Paul,
I'm looking up on my control.
If the doctor said it, that's it.
Let me mention two classic fights involving Gomez, okay? One is with him and the great Lupe Pintor,
who is moving up to challenge him for the title.
And the other was Gomez against the great Azuma Nelson.
Yeah, Azuma surprises, but...
Oh, no, you mean Sanchez against Nelson.
No, Gomez.
Assuming Nelson.
They both fought Nelson.
Okay.
Sanchez fought him and Gomez fought him.
Gomez fought Azuma too?
Yes. And Azuma beat Gomez. I remember that because Art Rush Jr., if I remember, was doing the commentary on that level.
Sanchez told me. I'm going to tell you what happened. Sanchez fought Azuma first, and then he lost the decision. And then they came back and they made Gomez. Then Gomez thought he can fight Azuma, and Azuma beat Gomez.
Well, Azuma told me, because
I
asked Azuma Nelson, because if you remember, Fox Stanley Sports is up on the show, never Rainbow Solar Channel Sports is up on the show. We're going to get Hoops the Gang. You'll just hold on, everybody, listeners. But you see the fight, the group here, Harold Weston Jr., this genial baby Lewis, Skeeter Mitchell, and Malcolm. So, I remember Azuma Nelson because originally Azuma Nelson and Chavez was a Friday night fight. I called Murray Goodman on a Tuesday for a credential. In those days you called in, and Murray teased me and said, hey, you know, why don't you call me Friday? And he gave me the credential. And I remember asking Azuma Nelson, who I got to know over the years because he became a king, but I said, you know, was Salvador Sanchez the best fighter you ever fought? He told me, he says, I can't tell you. He said, because when I fought Sanchez, I took him on 10 days' notice.
Right.
And remember, that fight was stopped.
Yeah.
That fight was stopped about the 13th round. Azuma was giving Salvador all he wanted and more. And he told me, so I can't tell you that. He said, because, you know, I took that fight on 10 days. Gang, let's hold on just a minute. Let's go. What's the story? There's these... Well, as Timothy has submitted here, rumors. How is Howard's back? I heard his back. You were saying his back is bad. He's not going to be able to do preseason?
Preseason. He probably won't try to make the American season November 1st. Try to make that his first game. But he's not going to training camp at all, no. Tell you, back is bad.
Wow.
I'm telling you that.
Wow.
So
he
now,
came with damaged goods already, didn't he?
Yes,
evidently,
it is.
Dusty.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes, it is.
Thing here, too, now, then... It's
you know,
no
Orlando
question
wanted to get rid of him anyway.
Huh? Well,
yeah.
So now, yeah, but if they wanted to get rid of him, why they having such a hard time letting him go. It seemed like they didn't want to let him go.
Because he signed an extension, and he wanted to stay.
Yeah.
And plus,
exactly.
To give him more power, you know, he told that he could get the coaches fired. Man, I was saying that last show. He had Stan Gundy and the GM, Otis Smith, fired.
My thing here now is that, for all intents and purposes, then L.A. is better for him. It's a better team.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, but he got to get his head in the game.
Mm-hmm.
He get his head in the game, he'd be all right. You know how he is. He likes to pout a lot.
The Nets
lucked out by not taking him. I mean, they're a pretty solid team.
Yeah, they're going to be good, but
yeah.
They still got a gel. They still got a blend. Oklahoma City's still a team to beat out there in the West.
Didn't you have a list of names for us for your basketball players of the year? What list you had the other day you put together for me?
You talk about the 20th century athletes?
Yeah, yeah.
21st century?
Mm-hmm.
All right, Michael Phelps, Tiger Woods, Kobe Bryant,
mm-hmm.
Eli Manning, LeBron James, Peyton Manning, Albert Pujols, Serena Williams, Bolt, your man Jeter, Tim Duncan, and Mario Rivera.
No tennis players. We want to lose Serena Williams.
I said Serena Williams. Oh, definitely.
No. I said we want to lose Serena. It's an amazing thing, you know, and how you're talking about no African Americans on the court. It's amazing, man, how that's happened. Or Americans, period. Serena Williams and her sister Venus have won Wimbledon 10 of the last 13 years. I mean, it's amazing nobody touched. They've won 5 apiece, and a Williams has won Wimbledon, the most prestigious of all. They've won it 10 times in the last 13 years. They're just about unbeatable as a doubles team, and we want to take time out and salute them here. Hoopsa, what else do we know in the world of basketball? And then we'll get back to
Shaquille O'Neal and Jamal Wilkes. I know you know what that is.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to get in their uniform if he tired from the Lakers.
You know, it's amazing that the Lakers have taken so long retiring his uniform, as well as the NBA, which finally put them into the Basketball Hall of Fame. I've also heard that Liberty, they're not playing their games in Madison Square Garden. They're playing their games in Jersey?
In Jersey, in Newark, yep.
Why is that, Hoopsa?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because you know they fixed the garden up. I thought they'd come back there. I don't know. They probably had a better deal at Newark.
Who will watch the Liberty in Jersey? I mean, I don't understand the move.
Yeah, I mean,
I thought was a New York team.
Me too. I thought they were sort of like the Knicks, the female Knicks of Madison Square Garden. But I heard, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's a Dolan move. I don't understand it. But
neither of us.
Yeah,
there's a mixed bag of reasons why they're not playing, you know, because my kid who's a Net fan, and you don't know how happy he is that they came in from Jersey. In fact, he got the season opening tickets already.
All right.
And
he
read out the schedule of the Barclays Center. Barclays Center has concerts and personalities and all that normally went to the Garden. And the
Garden is not doing that much personality.
They're not doing it that much.
The top personality is Latin, white, black. I mean, JC, of course, has two or three. Well, JC owns the place. But, I mean, the Garden that normally had all these concerts, are now booked.
Well, you know what that means?
They have changed their whole platform in the Garden. They put all their little concerts into the small plus spot.
The fair form.
On top of that, they charge you so much money.
Which is now called the theater.
That's the thing, too, gentlemen. Doc Stanley Sports Up on the Blake, but in the work, Rainbow Solar Channel Sports Up. That's the thing, too. Now, you know, the person from Brooklyn and Queens. They don't have to go all the way into the city. They have to worry about parking. It costs you just as much to park your car as down there buying the ticket for whatever you went to in the Garden. It was just crazy. You couldn't find a place to park. If you did, you came out, you couldn't park for so long. If you stayed too long, they towed your car. But parking was crazy. Parking, you know, you look at our society, you know, they got more parking lots than they got apartment buildings.
Yeah, they make a lot of money.
Yeah. That's how they make their money, Doc. That's how they make their money.
I know, but it's like how it's sad and touching. You know, man cares nothing about, you know, helping his fellow man. It's just, so now.
But the dollar bill.
Okay, my nephew now, Damien, instead of catching the train or leaving work and going up to the bus terminal and catching the bus to Jersey, and then you got to catch the bus at the right time
That's
after the game because
New
if
Jersey
you don't catch the bus leaving, you're going to be left
crap.
To Jersey. Now
he's
half an hour away from where he wants to go. And now
exactly,
the people in New York.
Doc, I was going to say half hour.
Yeah, he's
half
hour
away.
From
here to the freaking. Yeah.
And the people and the person from Long Island now, they take the Long Island train right to the Barclays Center. You know what I mean?
And, Doc, I'm sure WWE is trying to get an exclusive.
Oh, you know that, Rudy. Come on. Rudy, cut it out. Rudy, cut it out and tell us right now who's got the deal. You know Just like Dusty. You know what they're doing. Who's got the deal,
Doc? But they are trying to get an exclusive, I'm sure. See, their deal with the Garden and their also arenas around the country is no other wrestling promotion besides W can, you know, use that building. I'm sure they're trying to get a similar deal with the Barclay Arena. You know,
no,
no other promotion can use that arena.
You guys are forgetting.
Promotion.
You guys are forgetting location, location, location.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's the main thing. I don't think it's going to
do
as great as people think it's going to do.
Because
You know what? You're not going to get the people from Jersey going all the way to Brooklyn. You're not going to get that.
Right.
Forget about that.
You're going to
get partially certain people coming from the Bronx to go to Brooklyn.
The Bronx, too, yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right.
I think you're wrong. I think it's going to do well, Hal. I think because
it's very well.
You might do well for a couple of years, but you're not going to keep a steady flow like Madison Square Garden. One thing I have learned being promoting around the New York area or since I've been living in New York all my life is that Brooklyn. And like I said before, Brooklyn, the Bronx, Staten Island, all those places, yeah, they might do one or two, but they're not going to keep a steady base going like the Manhattan area. Because it's a location borough where you can get to. Like you said, you can get the train from Jersey, come right in 15, 20 minutes right out of Jersey and be in New York. Okay.
Yeah, but Darryl, you don't have to go to Jersey. I mean, let's look at the other side of the ledger. The guy that lives in Queens, the guy that lives in Brooklyn. I mean, I don't have to go through going to the Port Authority to catch a ride to Jersey. I mean, the big thing, people, Madison Square Garden, if the Barclays Center plays this right and makes this accessible to the everyday person, they'll do all right because the everyday person can't go to Madison Square Garden.
Hey, let me tell you something, Amel. People today are lazy, okay? I don't care what you say. They're lazy.
You're
going to
take a hit for that.
They're not going to do the travel that we did before. They're lazy. They're used to just sit behind a computer, and if they got to make 10 more steps to get to another place, they're not going.
They're not going
to
do it.
Well, but Hal, that's my point. Brooklyn is a lot closer to people living in Brooklyn are already there. People in Queens.
Now, let me explain something to you. Brooklyn is known. You got to understand, Manhattan is the moneymaker. Manhattan is the moneymaker. Brooklyn,
location.
To everybody else, is for the poor people, in a sense. We know there's certain locations that got rich people, but really, it doesn't have as many rich people in Brooklyn like you have Manhattan.
But how? Rich people can go anywhere, Harold. Go to Brooklyn as well as they can in Manhattan.
Well, you'll see. You'll see.
I mean, Brooklyn
I'm not saying that, Mel. I'm just saying that you're not going to get that steady flow going through it just like
that's
you do
right.
in Manhattan.
All the boxes. Here's Dusty. Carol's right. All the boxes.
He's right.
Skeeter,
you started it. You started it, Skeeter. Skeeter, don't you call back no more either.
Look. MSG,
you know what? But you know what, fellas? You know what? I can't help but believe if you get good marquee events, people will come to see
it. People will come and see it, but
to a point.
MSG is a crossword, the crossword of all activities. What I was saying, maybe I may have started, is that I look at
Skeeter
the
started
kids,
it, but you pulled the
gasoline
on
to
it.
Me,
Skeeter
says,
started
look,
it.
Pop, all the stuff. All the stuff that's happening in Barclays Center, I said, oh, God, wasn't a lot of these things at MSG? Maybe it's a novelty. Harold, you're right. Maybe it's a novelty for a while, but maybe it'll burn out because the crossroads of activity is still MSG. And remember, you got the Long Island Railroad down there. Right. And you got the A train. You got the and people
the four
were coming
train.
From Long Island.
The three
or whatever,
train.
Boom. Everything runs to Madison Square Garden.
Okay,
so,
listen,
right,
you don't agree with me.
Like,
that's
when you
understand
when you talk
let's
about
move on
Brooklyn.
To another subject. Let's go. Hurry up.
My point is that when I'm talking about Brooklyn, the
right
first
now.
Thing comes to your point is that's crime. And you keep getting these words, gunshots in Brooklyn.
Gunshots.
All right? People
Brooklyn
don't want to go through that
Brooklyn.
Aggravation.
Now, Carol, I see. Yeah. Now, the point you bring up, I'll spend $50, $30 more and be safe and alive than to save $50 and never be seen again.
Right. I mean, the last thing to know that you're gonna go to a place that you know there's nothing but you've been hearing people getting shot, and everything. They got gangs, you know, around in the Brooklyn area. Why
right.
go there and take a risk?
Exactly. Well, you got a point. And basically,
point.
He's right. But I was just shocked that so many activities were going to Barclay, but it could be just a novelty until the novelty wears off. I enjoy it because, man, I'm half hour, you know. But I personally don't mind taking the A train straight to Madison Square Garden. Boom, it's another 20 minutes. So what?
And then you're not going to get the Long Island people going because that's too much of a hassle for them to get going from one place from Long Island to go to Brooklyn.
Right. Go to Manhattan and then take the train to Brooklyn.
Well, it
yeah,
depends what kind of shows
yeah.
they got down there. People will show up for it.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
they got down there.
Yeah, well, that's the time you got your Jay-Z because we know that's that rap.
You got Barbra Streisand coming in. You got a lot of people coming in.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying
Gospel.
To pull it in and see how it pulls in. But, I mean, my
yeah.
point is you ain't going to get it all the time. That's what I'm saying. It's, like
right no,
now, it's,
right.
New. It's new. We all want to see what it looks like. We want to be there. That's about it. But watch how
right.
it's going to lay off real quick.
Exactly. You'll get to see the Nets. You enjoy them. And that's it. Yeah, and then Oscar De La Hoya's every 2 months he'll have a boxing show, and that's another risk. How long can he keep attracting people to Brooklyn to fill up the 19,000 seats? He has a big fight October 20th, three world championships, and all the kids from Brooklyn except one outsider for the Bronx. But I mean, how long can he promote that way?
The only kid that came out of Brooklyn, I mean, several came out that can draw, and I mean. How many kids you know right now? Except, Paulie, he all right, but he ain't gonna draw no 19,000-20,000 people.
No, he's
not. Hell, do you think they'll take the security factor into consideration when they have these events?
It doesn't make no difference. The thought in your mind. Let me just say this: you know that you're gonna have all the security around, but you know it's still the death zone. And it's still killing. Would you risk yourself going there?
No, I guess I wouldn't.
All right.
I think all the points are valid. I think it's going to do well. I think it's going to do well.
Yeah.
I think the garden is fading. Okay. The key to the garden staying successful is going to be how well the Knicks play. But I think the garden is fading. You know, rich people can go anywhere they want. You know, Brooklyn. Has long been looking for the void that will never be filled by the Brooklyn Dodgers. But you got to forget one time, you know, Brooklyn ruled. When you had the Dodgers here, man, you had the Dodgers, the Yankees, and the Giants. You know, the Giants was the one that wasn't selling too well. You know, the Yankees were doing that, but the Brooklyn Dodgers ruled. They ruled
yeah.
it here. I mean, Brooklyn.
That was a different time. People wanted to do something. We didn't have the internet. We didn't have all this stuff. People wanted to go out. They wanted to meet each other.
But how?
And go
don't
places.
You think if
it's a different era?
If don't you think if I can see Jay-Z for $25 as opposed to $100 in the garden, then I got to park my car? I look at the crime stats. You know, as a police officer, you know, crime ain't that much down in Manhattan as it is other boroughs.
It would be a thing saying now if I got to go see Jay-Z and I got to go underneath the tunnel and I got to wait in line in the traffic. And it's going to take me more than just 25 minutes. It's going to take me now an hour and 15 minutes. Is Jay-Z worth this time for me to go through all this nonsense?
Man, you don't think so, but you guys got a lot of hip-hop.
I'm going to tell you how they thinking. Because as I've been moving along with these young kids and the young generation, their mindset is not running on a full tank. Okay?
Well, that's true.
They're not running on a full tank. And my man, if they ain't getting a free ticket, I mean, they'll pay for the ticket for, you know, just to go see what's happening because that's where the happening is at. But you're going to try to pull myself, all of us that's in our 50s and getting our 60s and everything, and say, well, do I really want to go all the way down there to this fight to Brooklyn tonight? It's raining. It's snowing. It's cold. Is this worth it? I know I got a free ticket, but is it worth it? I can get it from off the internet and write about it.
Right, right. Exactly. I live in Jersey and I got a free ticket. Why should I come from Jersey all the way to Brooklyn?
I'm telling you, it's too much of a hassle.
Yeah, it is. Just because it's a free ticket, you know. But
I'm gonna tell you another thing, Mel. What's the next thing gonna bear in mind? Well, who is he fighting? Is he fighting anybody? Why would I go all the way? He ain't fighting nobody. I know you're gonna win.
That's right. You guys jumped on me. Who is Austin Trout? Who is he?
And Dusty, I still say I was
laughing 2 weeks ago. He said, "Who the heck is Austin Trout?"
Yeah, I mean,
he happens to be what I'm
trying to say, Mel. All in consideration, people are not moving as fast and want to get out as fast as they want to get out.
And Dusty, you knowing being a boxer, but knowing wrestling also, like I said, you got a better chance of setting the place out with him against Stunning Steve Austin than you have against Austin Trout.
basically, that's what it is. You know,
and you understand, Paulie Malignani, he's all right, but he's not a new thing. He's not a new face. He's been knocked out. He's been beaten and everything. I mean, he's not something that's a bright star coming along that we all want to see.
And not only that, Hal, but Paulie can box, but he can't break an egg.
Right. And he ain't fighting nobody.
Hey, Hal, what do you think about a match between Paulie and Zab Judah? You think that would be appealing?
That would be appealing for Brooklyn.
It will never happen.
Who,
you know why?
Who wins that fight, Paulie and Zab?
Doc, let me just put the Shabazz on this. You know why it never happened? I talked to Paulie when we went to the Barclay, and I said, Zab and
Ivan. Who wins the fight, Dusty?
I just watched it out the window because they'll never fight. You know why?
Paulie is not in no position. No, but who is Paulie Malignaggi? Paulie's no position.
Doc,
I mean, Paulie's talking yang-yang now.
Will you shut up? Listen to what I'm telling you. I spoke to Paulie, and I said,
Paulie,
fight between you and Zab Judah, all Brooklyn guys, you're Benson Hirsch, he's Brownsville. I said, look, a long time ago, and this is what I told you too, Doc, about 8 months ago, there's talk of Zab and Paulie. What happens? Zab says, I'll fight you, Paulie, but hear that ugly crap again. I'll do it on a catch weight. And Paulie says, no good.
Paulie has a title now, Dusty. He's got a title now.
But this is what I'm talking about. You know, I was happy when Floyd Mayweather, Miguel Cotto, and God, who was the other the third party? Oh, yeah, Paul Malignaggi says, no, I will never fight a catch weight. I hope it grows with all the other fighters.
Okay, hold on, Dust. Hold on. Hold
I don't
hold
like catchweight.
Okay, hold
on.
Okay.
Hold on.
All I want is who wins Paulie and Zab. That's all. Give me that.
I'm
going to
tell you who's going to win.
No. Okay, hold on. Hold on. You keep your thought. Harold, who wins Paulie and Zab? Who wins that fight?
I'm pitching the fight in my head. I'm just, you know, looking at Paulie running. Running around the ring.
Yeah.
And I'm watching Zab doing his shake and bake it situation before he throws a punch. And chasing Paulie. Oh, man.
What you have to understand, and in the panel, what you have to understand is we have to understand which Zab are we talking about? Which Zab is going to show up? You know, Zab Judah is like the New York Jets, okay? It depends on which one.
Whoa, that's a low blow. Whoa,
whoa. Hey, Rooney, you didn't have to go there, Rooney. You didn't have to go there, Rooney.
Yeah, see, we ain't going to go for that now.
Hey, Doc, Paulie, Zab is like the New York Jets. It depends on which team shows up. Is it the squad that put 40 on the ball, or is it the squad that looked that bad today?
And that's it. I understand what Paulie said. You know, Paulie's
a kind
of guy.
That's a low blow after the
bell. Scoot, it was low. I mean, especially with the Jets just losing and C-Wing's not here, Rooney. That was cold, baby. That was a straight-up body slam, and he's sleeping, okay? And we're going to have the straight-up body slam. And Dusty, I know what you're saying about Paulie, but, you know, Paulie is a guy that think he's a whole lot better than what he is.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're right, Doc.
You know, I mean, you know, for me,
right.
Paulie's
really
a nice guy.
Yeah,
but, you know,
he is, but he don't realize he don't know how to fight.
And not only that, I'm going to say this, Joe. Now, he reminds me of Pernell Whittle. There are women who can hit harder than Pernell and Paulie.
Let me say something now. It has nothing to do with hitting. It's about
knowing how to play. Here's a guy who thinks he's a whole lot, and I understand that you think, you know, a certain thing, but, you know, and I like the guy, the attitude that he brings, but, you know,
he's funny.
Paulie ain't all that Paulie can beat him.
He's not.
Well, that's exactly what, you know, somebody said, depends on which Zab Judah shows up.
Mm-hmm.
When I go back to Paulie too, which Paulie's going to show up to?
It makes no difference.
Let's cross timelines. The only thing that makes it attractive is that it's a Brooklyn, an all Brooklyn championship fight. That's what makes it attractive.
Hold on, Skeeter, what are you saying, Skeeter?
Let's cross timelines. I tell you what. Let's cross timelines and make a mythical match.
Okay.
Harold Weston, Paulie Maglioli, Harold could call around and knock him out.
Yeah.
Paulie would call around and knock him out. Harold would not have to call around because Paulie wouldn't show up. Okay? No round to call. Hey, Paulie, listen, I'm not going all the way to Manhattan. I live in Brooklyn.
Doc Stanley, that was hard. Poor Paulie. You denigrate him that badly.
Worse than the Jets.
Hey, Dusty, quit using these big words like denigrating, okay?
Let me just say this. Paulie's manager would not even have my name in his mouth.
In the conversation.
You forget how to
spell
Harold.
Harold. No, Harold, you're wrong. He said Harold can fight as long as it's Harold Weston Sr. The fight's on.
This concludes another edition of Sports in Depth
with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports In Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Okay, mic on, lights off. Here's Mike back.
Welcome to Sports In Depth with Doc Stanley on the Blake Radio Network. On each and every show, Doc takes you inside the world of sports to hear from the movers, shakers, and decision makers. I know you thought there were seven wonders of the universe, where here's the eighth, Doc Stanley.
Doc Stanley, Sports Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Zone Channel Sports Depth is the show. As you know, we always try to leave here, but mic on, lights off, we can't leave. Dusty, next time you use that term like that, say it in another language because my fans are irate. You know what I mean? Hey.
I had an encyclopedia for lunch.
When you told me to shut up, they'll be marching around your house tomorrow, baby. And controllers, don't even look, it's a Jewish holiday.
Look, they're already marching. I see the flashlights, and they're coming through the window, man.
That's not cousins.
I touched the raw nerve because I used the word keep quiet.
Hey, look, I didn't mean to step on the intro, Doc, but I have to say this. Not only I'm not even going to say we would have bet on Howard against Paulie, but I will say we would have bet, like you said, we would have bet that Paulie doesn't even show up. That would have been an accident.
The only way
that Paulie will touch Harold Weston is when the referee gives him instructions and they shake hands. That's it.
I would smile at everybody with that kind of fight. I would just say,
Paulie couldn't touch hell with a handful of rocks, man.
You know what's so funny, fellas? Because when you talk about the fellas, Paulie's people would have denied it, but I was just thinking about Vito Antifermo and Rocky Mattioli, right? When those two guys became champion of the world, Gil called them up. Now you understand, I'm a welterweight, and these guys, one went to the middleweight, one went to junior middleweight.
Right.
And they won
168.
Right. So Gil calls them up and says, called Vito's manager and said, won't we make a fight with Harold and Vito in the garden for the middleweight championship? Vito's manager said, you can kiss my behind. We can beat him when he was out of the goddamn army. He's in the army for 18 months. How the hell we want to fight? Tell Hal go kiss off.
That would have been a good fight.
Now, that would have been a big fight at Madison Square Garden. They said, hell no.
Hal, I could see you outpointing Vito, but I think you might have cut him up first. He's a bleeder.
Oh, I was going to cut him up. There ain't no question about that. That's the whole thing about me. I was going to definitely – that was the whole thing about the first fight. I knew I was going to stop him on cut because I was going to beat that eye to death. I mean, but one thing I give Vito, he had a lot of heart. He still wanted to fight. I mean, no matter what it was, he still wanted to fight.
Vito is part of that whole Skeeter Mitchell, that whole Destino Baby Lewis, that whole Harold Weston, that whole Emil Griffin, guys that have, you fighters, man, of that era, there was a rivalry, and yet there was a brotherhood. There was a camaraderie, and there was combat. And you just don't see that anymore. And it's part of that era. It's part of that generation. The respect that you have for each other, and the fact that, it was about getting that ring, doing the best you could, and performing because this is what I do, and this is what I do. I'm the best at, and money had its place. Okay, no question about it. But it wasn't the sole importance of what you do. You talked about that too, Harold, about the pride that you had, and the thing you always talked about is that these were licensed weapons. And you guys just had it. I mean, it's part of the era and part of the times. You never have that kind of feeling and camaraderie and respect. in the class. I mean,
there's no pride today. There's no pride. The pride is
why,
gone.
Why, Harold? Why? Why?
Because money has took
no
money. Money has took over. Money is more important
exactly.
than pride.
Money has
and
taken
that,
over.
Guys, money
today
has
they even
taken over.
Guys today even got nutritionists. What the hell?
Yeah.
Now they have no nutritionists. Right, nutritionists, personal trainers.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of money now.
Yeah,
to,
there's a lot. But my
guys.
Point is they're growing up now to not have no pride. They're growing up to try to just do for themselves. It's not a
they
we
can't,
no
Harold,
more.
Harold, Harold, they,
a we,
they, you're
no
saying
we,
they can be brought. They've been brought. That's
yeah, they can be bought. I mean, and that's just...
The money is a factor.
And an old gangster told me this a long time ago. He said, if a person could be bought, they're a person that you can't trust because that's the person that will get you killed.
Right. That's the person who will walk away from you when you need them.
I go deeper than that. You know what I mean? I just let you know that if you're going to do something, everything is based on how far you're going to go. And I knew that when I first went to the boxing world, how my health and everything was in it. When I came out, what made me get so vicious in boxing is when I went to the military. And I saw how that process was. And I knew I was getting paid $200-some a month. But you know what? My life didn't mean nothing. I was defending
right.
this country, but my life was not that much to it. And I felt that
right.
if that's the way this thing is, then shit. I'm going to go back in this box and give it 110%. You know what? And I don't give a shit.
Right. Exactly.
You know
what
happens. When I was in the military, in the Marine Corps, I was getting paid $288 a month.
Right.
I said, damn, that's all my life is worth?
Right. 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 Excuse
me, a lot of money?
No, I said it wasn't a lot of money. You realize
what
your life is
not
worth nothing.
When you broke it down, and I was in the military for these guys, when you broke it down, it came down to almost 15 cents an hour, but on a 24-hour scale.
Mm-hmm.
So, man,
right.
when you stood on that cash line, payday, and they paid you, and you got something like $100, in my day, $100, $110 a month.
Right.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's all I get.
Yeah.
And you better hold on to every penny.
And you know what?
You hold on to every penny because if you blow
and you were
sending
half of that home,
canteen,
right?
Yeah.
You were sending that money home, right?
Yeah, I was sending mom. What is it? Soldier's deposit. I was sending mom home monies, and I had to hold on to whatever's left. If I went over to the canteen and sat down and drank that 3.2 beer and party, guess what? I'm broke for the next month. And
yeah,
I have a
but
dime.
The thing,
thank God
you know, but you know
that
what,
you
fellas?
Had your three squares in your meal. Other than that, you got nothing.
Yeah, but with that money, the way it was, right? And I watched the soldiers. I watched several soldiers, but I watched the soldiers die while we was in basic training, right? And what surprised me...
Oh, basic was a bitch, man.
Yeah, and what surprised me was my captain who I was driving with my captain, and when the soldier was going on a routine on the firing range, right, we had to double time because we were late, okay?
Mm.
One of the guys falls out, and the guys was getting ready to stop, and they said, don't stop. Leave him. We got to move, right? Medic will take care of him. So while I'm driving, my captain said, stop the car, Weston. Stop the Jeep. It was in the Jeep. I stopped it. He looked at him. He said, and he's just standing there. And the other guy, the medic guy was coming in. He started doing it. He said, how are you doing? He said, he ain't going to make it. He said, okay.
Wow.
He said, all right. He said, just sign him up. And, you know, who is this soldier? And they told him who it was. He said, okay. He said, we'll see what it is. And that was it. We jumped back and went right to the firing range. That situation said, this is the way it is.
Exactly.
This is
you know, when in the Corps, when you were on the rifle range, if you missed your target, they call it Maggie's Draws for some reason.
Maggie's Draws. Oh, my God, I haven't heard that in 50 years.
Yeah, Maggie's Draws. That's right.
Maggie's Draws.
You know. And you would have to, they call out your target number, you put your piece on safe, stick your finger in the air, and your PMI, your primary marksmanship instructor, would come on, take that finger,
stick it in his mouth and try to bite the tip of your trigger finger off.
You know, that's how rough these guys were. I mean,
they were rough.
Yeah, you had to hit the target, and I was a perennial forever Maggie's draw. I couldn't shoot black. Yet, no, I'm serious. I'm serious. I thought you came in from East Harlem and you shot those zip guns. Well, this is different, man. I mean, you guys are talking to war stories. Oh my God, I got a million. And
yeah.
But I'm left-handed. And you had to fight the M1, fire the M1 with the right hand, and I couldn't. I put it on my left hand. They said, no. There are no left-handed soldiers in the army. I said, well then, shit, send me home. All right, why you gotta give me 30 push-ups, man?
Right, right. Oh man, I tell you, it's crazy, man. It was really, really crazy.
I want to say something here. And you know what? I don't have a problem with all the accolades and salutations that is given to today's military, but you know, where were the accolades for us? I'm talking about us guys. You know, when we went through an airport, nobody clapped for us. You know, when we walked down the street, you know what I mean? They said, okay, there he is. You know, we went in because, as Harold said, we went in because that was what we were supposed to do. That was a
right
of passage.
It was
right in our country.
It wasn't.
Today, it's a job. And let me tell you something. I tell these guys, if half of these people in the military thought for the minute mindset that they had to fight the war, no, they wouldn't have joined. We went in when we knew there was Vietnam. When the black soldiers and Latin soldiers went in back in the 60s, we were going to fight a war where we couldn't vote in this country. So don't tell me about guys today. Remember the soldiers. I'm saying don't forget the guys in Vietnam who they still didn't call a war. Don't forget me and my crew back in the day because we did it because that's what we were supposed to do. That's what we wanted to do. And nobody, it wasn't a job. It was our obligation.
Hey, Doc, with all due respect, if you go to service,
with all due respect,
Doc,
duty of service.
If you with all due respect, Doc, if you go to certain states in this country, report to those jacked up voter laws, you still couldn't vote in this country because they're trying to suppress the vote.
The guy told me
the election coming up.
In Thailand in 1970. I was contemplating matrimony. I had a girl from Thailand. Guy told me, understand this, Stanley. This is 1970. Okay, this is 1970. Guy told me, well, you know, understand this, Stanley. Now, I'm over in the combat zone. I'm working 6 days a week, 10 hours a day, one day off. Okay? And the guy's telling me that if I bring this girl back to the United States, she's a tie, okay? There are certain places in the USA that will see this as what they would call one of those mixed marriages, and it would not be recognized. I can die on the battlefield, but I can't bring home this woman as my wife. And it's not, like you said, Rooney, that it's not. You know, my thing is, you know, is that I want my guys and my time to be recognized. You know, I'm tired. I'm not begrudging them, but all this. Don't forget our soldiers. Pray for our soldiers. Look what they're doing for our country. They signed up as a job. We signed up as our obligation. It was the draft. This is what you did for your country. My country didn't buy me. I said, hey, country, I'm doing this for you. And that's the thing today that my guys in my time, you and Skeeter and Dusty and Timothy F. Smidley and Theo Easley and Barry Johnson, this was our obligation. And we went. We went ready. We went proudly. It wasn't a job. I was obligated. These people today see it as a job, and if anybody told them, you're going to have to go fight a war, they'd say, you know what? This ain't the job for me. Well, we said this is our job to do.
That's
this
right.
This is why they had, when they had the draft, you owe you owe your nation at least 2 years of your life to serve the country.
No, you got that wrong. You owe them 10 years.
2 years.
No,
let me get you straight now before you get out of hand.
Okay, go ahead. Tell me what it is. Do you want to listen?
You got 2 years active duty. You got 2 years active duty, and you got 8 years on reserve. If the war broke out, you had to automatically go back.
You got 8 years on reserve.
You did not walk out. I'm gonna tell you this right now. You did not walk out of that office when the 2 years up and had an honorable discharge in your hand. I bet you.
No, you did not. I know.
You
that.
Know why?
This is what I'm
because you
tell
didn't
you.
Get it until after a 10 year. Until the 10 years was up.
You have.
I know
to
that because I that was the reason why when they ran the whole thing down to me. When I got drafted and I was fighting against it, and they said, and I said, well, all right, I'll do this 2 years. They said, no. You got 10 years with us. I said, where
you're
the
right,
10 years coming at?
Right, because you did 2 years active and you were in reserve after
right.
you got out.
You got but you was in the military for 10 years, and if a
right,
war broke out, your butt was coming back.
You get called
back.
And I went in 1959 way ahead of you guys, man. It was
right.
the same standard.
Well, that's
and
what I'm saying.
Is that, yes,
and nothing has changed until 1970,
right.
1976, 1977, something like that. I mean, 74.
And the sad thing was that I did my 2 years. I did almost 3.5 years because they said, hey, there's trouble in Germany. Korea
right.
is still bubbling. We got the rumbling from Vietnam. We are extending you. I said, oh, crap. And that's right. I'm not going to go out there and fight these suckers, but you got stuck.
And I got a question for all the military guys, though, here, though. Dusty, Skeeter, Harold, Doc, one question, one honest answer. Is it true that you can piss everybody in the damn platoon off except the cook?
Well, except the cook, because that's what he took care of. Well, I was a perennial KP, so I don't care. I was the front line. I threw my pocket and I ate all the food.
I was in the field most of the time, so I lived pretty much off sea rations. You know, so I
sea
really didn't care about I was
Hey, how's that stuff taste? How's that stuff taste, bro?
Like 20 years old. That's what
well,
you
I ain't
rations.
Worried about it, because I always had somebody cooking for me, so I ain't even worried about
yeah.
it.
See, he's a gentleman soldier. He lived the high of the land.
I did.
Special privileges, right?
I swear to God, that military taught me so much. But I had such a hustle in that joint, boy.
Exactly.
Man, oh man,
you learn
oh,
how
man,
to hustle.
Boy.
Believe you me.
Ooh,
you
God,
learn how
I
to
loved
hustle.
It.
You learn how to. You go out there. You go out there and you gamble on payday, but you lose your money. But then you see who the card shop is, so you partner with the card shop because you can't lose. He knows how to play. I don't know how to play.
Boy,
and you make your money.
If you don't want to do KP,
yeah.
I had long shocking business going, and I had the gambling
exactly.
going. Shoot, I had it all going, boy. I mean, I didn't go to the place. I had people cooking my food, bringing it to me, so I ain't even had nothing to worry about it.
Oh, you lucky dog, you.
Oh, yeah. Military. I'm going
to
tell you, if I didn't have boxing, I'd have stayed in.
Yeah. You learn how to hustle, and you learn how to survive because that freaking chump change that you got for a salary was nothing. And
well,
in fact, I wanted to go TDY with the boxing team as a coach. That faggot-ass coach wanted me to box. I said, wait a minute, I have 4 pro. I'm not going to go out there and fight amateurs. Oh, no, but I'll change your name and nobody knows. I said, no. I'm not going to fight. I'll coach. But because of that, he wouldn't let me train the guy. Yeah.
Just before I got discharged, I was in Camp Lejeune, and we had this crazy corporal. His name was Leon Steen. This guy was a nut, man. I mean, really.
Wow.
He was a nut.
Wow.
But once you got in the ring with him, he was all pissed. I mean, he was real focused, but he was a
yeah.
nut, you know?
Psycho.
I tell you, military made me. I mean, it showed another life to me, boy.
It gave you
a
new dimension of life.
It did. If anything, I can do for the military, I'll do, boy, because, I mean, it saved my life in a lot of ways, but
Yeah,
I can
exactly.
Tell you, boy.
Give you new maturity, yeah.
Yeah,
because
it
you're
it won't
yourself,
make you
man.
One way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, I hear young boys today, they say, I'm not going to go in the military. I don't want to die for my country. I said, idiot, the purpose is to make the other guy die for his country. Where'd you get that?
Exactly.
Thing? You know?
This business of, oh, kill or be killed. I said, no, forget the other part. I'm kidding. I
like that. Let's forget the other part, huh?
So yeah, forget the other part.
Because
I'm going
over there. What?
No, but it's true.
Nah.
You have your life is your Foot Locker, your 3x6, your two wall lockers, your uniform, your civilian uniform, and the three slaps and a flop that you get. That's it. That's your life. And then you want to hustle? You got to do the loan shark. You do the car plane. Kids that
you don't have
do
to tell
KP,
Hal about the loan sharking.
And kids that want to do KP, I say, okay, you pay me, I'll take your KP over. Christmas, man, Christmas week, I $40 to take over dude's KP, and easy
that
money
was
because
money.
Nobody was there. Everybody
was
gone. Everybody was gone. I do.
Hey, don't
yeah,
forget
I would
guard
do
duty. Don't forget guard duty.
Yeah.
That was a good hustle too, you know.
Guard duty, are you kidding? I knew my general orders, so I wouldn't do guard duty. I would be colonel's orderly. The hell with that crap. I don't want to walk no stupid military. Really?
Doc Stanley,
I'm not going to do no freaking post.
Mic on, lights off, some veterans. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, you're listening here in the United States and across the world. You know, these are the men, and I said, before it, who saw it as an obligation. I'm not taking any, and you know, and they weren't that many females in the military then either.
No, you can add men. You know what's so great about the military back then in those days is that you met every walk of life that came through there.
That's
every
right,
walk
every
of
walk.
Life.
That's right.
And everybody was equal walking in there when you came into the military.
And not only that,
if
Hal,
you
know
rich,
what? You found out too. You found out that. Did we lose dust here? I hope he didn't drop it. We found out that, you know, the guy from New York really was head and shoulders above the rest of the guys across the country. New York City brought you an automatic education and lifestyle, a way of living that great saying, if you can live and make it here, you can make it anywhere. And when you went to New York, I mean, there were guys from Tennessee and Virginia and Chicago and Indiana and Washington who were in awe of you. I mean, the empire said you were a New Yorker, and you found that the guys from New York. I never saw this guy from Queens before. I never met this guy from the Bronx. But you united. You got together. You were one because
right.
you were New Yorkers. And
you're
and you
from New York.
We gotta watch. You know what we better do here too, real quickly. I'm looking at now. I gotta check. Hal, when's your birthday again, Harold?
Mine is April 7th.
Okay, just making sure we got the. I'm doing my cow. And when's your birthday, Skeeter?
January 27th.
27th, really? So you right there in the. My mother is the 21st. Okay, Harold is. Yours is January 27th.
Mm-hmm.
Harold is the 7th of April. I know when Rudy is a Pearl Harbor baby.
Indeed, a day that will live in infamy.
Really?
December 7th.
Dusty's 24th of January. And we better, you know, Rooney, I think you better give us a close out real quick because I'm losing calls. I don't want everybody to fall out. Doc Stanley, Sports Network on the Blake with the Network Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Network Show. Real quickly, because I've lost Dusty and I've got Rooney and Skeeter Jones. The fight last night, Hal, does anybody want to see a rematch of that?
No.
No, it's not necessary, Doc, for a rematch.
Yeah,
we know it pretty
but,
much goes the
but
same
unfortunately,
way.
Unfortunately, they will try to make it for one particular reason. Like I said, there was no American on that show, okay? The show was a pay-per-view, okay? So that tells you right then and there, they don't care what anybody else. If they got the Mexican that wants to see it and they can do a million Mexicans that's going to go see it, they're going to put it together again. Because that was a lot of money. And what's the name? Made more money than he ever made before. He made $1.6 million. Okay.
Chavez
made $3 million. $3 million.
Oh,
so now,
Chavez made what?
$3 million.
Are you serious? He was a champ.
He was a champ. So he made $3 million. And what's the name? Made $1.6 million. My point is now that he's champion, it'll turn around or be even money. But the fact is, When we find out this week what the numbers did, if the numbers did anything over a million, believe me, they'll make a rematch.
Hey, fellas, I got to ask you this.
Of course,
why in the hell are we getting ready to see Pacquiao Marquez 4?
I don't even know why you brought that up. Jesus.
Because
Christ.
It sells.
Really,
and now, because of what Harold said, ain't no Americans. I mean, those Mexicans and those Filipinos are going to buy Pacquiao Marquez 4.
That's right.
They're going to buy
They don't care. They don't care if not one Mexican, one American don't buy it. They don't care. They just know that them Mexicans and those Philippines going to buy. And they know they got a million, 2 million buys. They happy.
The only American fighter I see that can really draw flies is Floyd Mayweather.
Yeah.
That's it. That's about it. That's about it. You got nothing else that's out there American that can draw. That nobody even knows about. That's the bad part about that anybody knows about.
And not only that, Doc, but any heavyweights that we had from the country that might have been able to fight, all of those guys are playing pro basketball and pro football.
Rooney, on that note, I think it's time for you to tell everybody good night. You're right. Tell us good night.
Yeah. Doc, the Sports In Depth Nation's been here. The Sports In Depth panel's been here. I'm Mel Smith Jr. I've been here. We have been here courtesy of the Blake Radio Network, and the straw that stirs the drink's been here. And that's Doc Stanley. Thank you, Doc.
Thanks,
Thank
Rudy
you, Gag. Fellas.
We'll be back here next week. We got a new panel member here in the Scooter Man, Harold Weston Jr., Justino Baby, Lois Lady, A, the Hoopster, and also... We also had Sea Wings, who is probably, he's on the Greyhound bus. He hope he don't want to jump off the bus while it's moving because the Jets lost. But he'll be back with us next week. Ladies and gentlemen, it is leaving with three thoughts. Service to others is rent you pay for your room here on earth. Muhammad Ali. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Be true. Ask Dr. Martin Luther King. Be true to yourself. Harold Weston, Jr. The Bible says the Son of Man came to serve and not be served. I simply say, live your life today as if you had to stand before God tomorrow. And with that, I say, trust in God. Gentlemen, I know that I deserve my enemies, but I doubt if I deserve my friends. But thank God that you are my friends. And here's another one. Larry Hart, as he's saying goodnight. Doc Stanley, Sports and Devil on the Blake Radio Network, Rainbow Soul, the channel Sports Devil, the show, mic on, lights off, the crew. And I say, God bless you all and good night.
This concludes another edition of Sports In Depth with Doc Stanley. We thank you for listening and encouraging you to tell a friend about Sports In Depth with Doc Stanley. You can hear that and many other great programs on the Blake Radio Network. Have a great day.
Sports In Depth with mic on, lights off. Panel members, Mel, Cosell, Smith Jr., Destino, Baby Lewis, Peter Mitchell, Harold Weston Jr., The Hoopster, Louis Luke Hart, and Cincinnati Sea Wings, Raymond. Lady A was on assignment, as was Nate B. Baseball. Join us next Sunday, 9 to 11, right here on Noble Lake Radio Network, Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports Devil. The show was Sports In Depth. Sports at its best. Topics that don't get any better. And the best possible panel in all the world. And I say once again from the bottom of my heart, God bless you all and trust in God. And a quick prayer. Dear Lord, we thank you. Guide us, strengthen us, lead us. Let your way be our way. In the name of your darlings in Jesus. Amen.
Yeah,
Sports In Depth on the Blake Radio Network. Rainbow Solar Channel, Sports In Depth of the show. Good night and see you next week. Thank you.